Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh boy. I get to do radio again. So much fun. What's that great scene? I've forgotten the actor. It's one of those baseball things. He plays it's like one of the brothers. And I keep forgetting the names. I'll think about it at some point. Anyway, he's pitching for high school. He was a high school baseball coach, and he ends up in the major leagues. And he looks at one of his fellow players and says, "Guess what? We get to play baseball today." You know, and I'm like, "Guess what? I get to do radio." And it really is fun. So if you want to try it, give yourself a shot here. In fact, we have a guest hour. I'm opening up the show. The Friday 8 o'clock hour is kind of like the end of the week, so I wanted to have some fun. So if you want to try your hand at actually hosting an hour, just let me know. And if you're a Facebook friend, that's a good way to get a hold of me, greg@writeyourlaws.com. Maybe I shouldn't say I'll get swamped with offers, but you'll find rapidly it's not what you think it is. It just makes it so much fun. All right, there's a lot of things going on today on the show. First of all, we have some Canada and Australia are picking up the audience, you know, quite rapidly. I mean, the United States is still overwhelmingly the majority of our listeners, but it's fascinating that Canada, Australia, as they rapidly become ever more stricter dictatorships, are you know, gravitating towards, you know, freedom radio here, which is what we are. And so the whole idea of Action Radio is that people can write the laws they consent to be governed by. Well, that's, I think people are getting, you know, thinking to themselves, you know what? Maybe we'll give that a try. Maybe it can't be worse than the dictatorship they now have. And of course, everything we do is within the normal legislative structure. We just offer better bills. And we have all kinds of those that we've been talking about of late. And so you go to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. The site is self-explanatory. Where you're going to write a bill is propose a new law. And this is all under the legislation heading on the menu bar. So write, propose a new law. And then we have our next category, citizen bill ideas. That's kind of our workshop. That's where we work on bills, get them ready to go. And then the place where they are submit from is all proposed laws. And those are the ones that have been proposed. In other words, we've sent them to people. Usually, first of all, on the congressional level, Matt Gaetz, you know, on the local level, different state legislators here and in different states. On the state level and the local level, of course, you know, whatever local city council or county commissions or things like that, school boards. That kind of stuff. So we cover all levels of government. So the more you want to get involved with this, the more you want to try it, the more we are open to you doing that. And the more I'm going to need a staff because this thing is going to explode one day. It's getting closer and closer. So I just wrote some notes down before the show. We've got this first hour. Bill Fecky is out this week too. So we've got till 8 o'clock when Wendy Arthur joins us with the Oh My God report, which is always fun. First of all, she has the most infectious giggle in the world. And it just cracks me up every time. So we'll do that. So we're kind of combining Bill's report and what I call the hump day report, this being Wednesday. And so we'll get to that. And then, of course, Wendy at 8. Chancey's out this week. So we have a new person coming in, just going to kind of substitute for the day. And that is Lindsay Horton. So Lindsay's going to talk about spiritual wellness, which is going to be quite fascinating. The third hour is going to be rather dramatic. We've got two women. Both mothers, one of which I know was arrested at gunpoint and her kids taken away, and the other one just completely abused in the family court system. And that would be Sarah and Lacey. And they're going to give us some information on their story. And I'll be talking to them in future weeks. We've got a bill that was started by Michael Volpe, who's the investigative reporter and author, who was on last week talking about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. And nobody ever heard of Heard until she was heard in the trial, which is kind of interesting. I guess she was an actress of some note, but more riding on the coattails of Johnny Depp. Anyway, so we have our family law project, the Action Radio Family Law Project. And that's where I found out the story of Sarah. And then Sarah told me about Lacey. And then between the two of them, these are incredible stories. I haven't heard a lot of details because I haven't really talked to them yet. I'll be doing that on the show today. And so I'll be hearing it as you hear it. And so I'll have a lot of questions. And, of course, the question we always ask is, what can we do about it? And so we have a bill on RICO statutes making family – let me see, I'll get the exact title here – anti-case-fixing statute or judicial RICO. So, in other words, this is a Michael Volpe bill. And so, in other words, this is a bill to treat family court as if it was a racketeering operation. And so that's going to need a lot of work. There's a lot of complex things in there, a lot of ideas, and I don't know whether we'll make it multiple bills or what we're going to do. But it's been around for a bit, and it's time to get some work on that. So we've got Family Court, Spiritual Wellness. We've got the Oh My God Report, and we got me in the first hour. So if you want to call, 215-383-3832. We also have a Skype line, but you have to call that a day ahead of time so that I can review and let you call in after that. And we have live chat. No one seems to be using our live chat yet. Well, not for a while anyway. It was when I first came on. So live chat is a function you'll see at the bottom of your broadcast page, and you'll find a place where you start a free account, and then you can type in anything you want. And so that's a good place to get a message if you're busy, you don't want to stay on hold, you know, and I try to get to calls, you know, quickly. But that's a place where you can just type in something and we sort of correspond back and forth there. Or a lot of times I'll just, you know, make the announcement right on the air. So here's the current situation. As I look at the world, I wrote down a few quick notes here. Gas up, interest rates up, supplies down, prices up, confidence down, market down, fear up. And that's pretty much where we stand. And then I wrote, how's that coup and dictatorship working out for y'all? You know, I mean, I laugh, but it's we don't call it that. You know, I mean, where's the daily coup report from the GOP geldings? You know, if they pay me money, I'd actually write them talking points every day. But that'd be one for today. You know, how's the dictatorship working out for you? Well, since they're a part of the dictatorship, the deep state part, you know, with McConnell and McCarthy. Just to name something like McCarthy going into conservative politics. That, you know, hey, call me crazy. But it's just interesting the way this thing is all kind of sitting out there. And they're just as responsible. You know, I mean, the way out of this is to get the Brandon electors disqualified from the states where they've shown vote fraud. Okay. Now, you don't have to show enough fraud to overturn the election or change the results. The fact that there is fraud changes the results because it's not fair. And so just as someone doesn't have to win to be disqualified from a race for cheating, you can come in last and still be disqualified because you cheated. Okay. The same principle applies in elections. If you cheat, if you commit vote fraud, if you've committed a crime, if it is a fraudulent election, you get disqualified, regardless of your outcome, whether you won or lost. It doesn't matter. You still get disqualified. Why? Because that's the law. That's the right thing to do. You know, so the Bill Barr philosophy that it doesn't count, you know, unless you, you know, have enough results to change or enough fraud to change the election is insane. That's like saying robberies don't count unless you stole enough money to, you know, put them out of business. That's irrational. That doesn't happen. Well, you know, so someone robs a bank, but it wasn't enough money to put them out of business because they have other branches and they can, you know, okay, fine. So that doesn't count? Yeah, I don't think so. So here's what's interesting about coups and dictatorships is that once the coup is over, you know, the legal government usually comes in and arrests them all and puts them on trial for treason. Okay. That would be a good thing to do here. In some countries, I think it was Romania with the Ceausescu's, when the people revolted against their communist dictatorship, Ceausescu's were just shot and killed. I mean, the people just took them out and shot them. I'm not recommending that. I don't like violence. I'm not advocating that at all, especially when we have such you know, great places to put them as the D.C. jail. And so what you need to do is replace the political prisoners who should have been let out, you know, day one, which had never been put in there, because all they were doing, you know, we were talking about people who were taking selfies by statues in the Capitol, the people that were necessary for the real coup to take place under the Capitol with Congress as they were being instructed as to what to do. I still believe that. So that's where the coup is. But coups normally result in, you know, if you steal a government, I mean, the consequences can be fatal. You know, a lot of times the penalty for a coup is execution in many countries. You know, this is serious stuff, and we're not taking it seriously. The people aren't taking it seriously. The only person I think taking it seriously is Donald Trump, who talks about the election fraud, and various other folks, Carrie Lake out in Arizona. I should talk to Cheryl Todd next time about that. Cheryl Todd of Gun Freedom Radio, as she says, was on yesterday. That was fabulous. She was a great guest. And I'll be on her show fairly soon, and she'll be on my show again. And I like to trade shows with people, you know, because we're all a team out here. I don't see fellow conservatives as competitors for ratings. I see us all as, you know, one big team trying to get our freedom back. Anyway, so let's see. We will see what happens. I've got a lot of different stories here, things that I've had sitting around for a while to cover. And so I'm going to kind of get to those, play a couple things real quick. You know, I never got a chance to play last time. And I'm back with the first story by Patrick Wood. And this is Patrick was on our panel before. I want to see if I can get him back tomorrow for the doctor panel because he's really interesting. Be back in a bit. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Panglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Panglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.
Yeah, I fully expect this to be a worldwide phenomena as it grows, especially because we've written a Bill of Rights for Australia that hopefully will catch on in different countries. With Australia and Canada listening, those are our greatest hopes, I think, for international growth, because the people are really pissed off at their dictatorship governments, and rightly so. And it's a wake-up call. You know, they went along with the gun bans and they went along with the gun restrictions thinking, well, that's the greater good and that's the public interest. Well, it's only the greater government good, and it's only the government interest, because they could, of course, keep theirs. And so that's something that was a wake-up call for us in the United States, more so than for Canada and Australia. And we said, we told you. You know, I'm not giving you a we told you so, but we told you so. We did. We really did. And said that once you let the guns go, then the full dictatorship is shortly to follow. And, of course, there's nothing they can do about it. And now, of course, Trudeau has declared that guns are not a legitimate self-defense means. So you can't use them. He can, you know, because they have the Second Amendment in reverse in Canada and Australia. And we're working towards that here. But the people can't. And so that's how you know you got a dictatorship: when the government has the privileges and the people have nothing, when the government has the guns and the people can't use them, you know, when the government has the money, all the tax dollars, and the people are poor. I mean, that's a dictatorship, and that's how it works. All right. So one of the most interesting people has only been on the show a couple of times, Patrick Wood. He runs a website called Technocracy. And of course, I subscribe to that to get all the details of what's going on. Technocracy is technology and bureaucracy. It's like people that went, you know, wild with Plato's Republic, you know, the rule by the good, you know, the good people, the elites, the ones that know what's going on should rule everybody else. You know, so Plato was an idiot in that sense. I don't even know if platonic relationships were Plato's ideas either. Who knows how this stuff works out? But the point is that
there are people that think they know best for everybody. Dr. Fauci, one Dr. Fascist, as we call him here on the show, the genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, narcissistic, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. He's into technocracy. That's his thing. In other words, because he knows everything, and he has both the technology, the science, you know, and the fact that he's the ultimate bureaucrat, makes him the perfect technocrat, you know, and a very good part of the idiocracy that's running the country right now. You've heard of aristocracies, monarchies, you know, democracies, all those things. Well, we have an idiocracy, you know, ruled by the idiots. And that's where we stand right now. So this is June 8th. Patrick Wood wrote this article, high-tech war is just as effective as rockets, bullets, tanks. He talks about the evil twins of technocracy and transhumanism. Okay, and this is his own website. He says the object of war is to kill or maim as many people as possible by whatever means. However, outright killing is often less efficient than wounding because more of the enemy's resources are consumed in caring for the wounded than burying dead bodies. Yeah, he's pretty blunt, which is why I like him, right? The overall goal of war, back to the article, the overall goal of war is to conquer and subdue a people. Isn't that what they're doing here? Anyway, in the process of conquering, the enemy must be psychologically and physically broken to the point that they give up their will to fight and they will and their will to assert self-determination. And that's why World War II, they started bombing cities. You know, they figured that both the Allies, us, the good guys, and the Germans, them, the bad guys, and the Japanese, you know, who bomb cities, figured that if you kill enough civilians, then all the other civilians will give up and, you know, their will to fight will be gone. Well, of course, just the opposite happens. You look at the Blitz in London or some of the other things that I mean, the German people were totally destroyed by bombing. I mean, so many cities, Dresden in particular, huge bombing raid for no reason whatsoever. I mean, it wasn't a military target. I mean, they killed thousands and thousands of people. I think it was British. That was a British nighttime raid. Maybe we took part too. We usually did daylight raids. The point was, it was to break the will of the German people. Well, you never broke the will of the German people. You never broke the will of the Japanese people. I mean, we had atomic bombs. That stopped the war, but it didn't break the will of the people. That's the big myth. You know, you kill millions of people and you think they're going to stop fighting. No, it only makes them. At that point, they have nothing to lose. You know, so everybody gangs up on the enemy, and even at the risk of an old country being destroyed, you still don't break the will of the people. All right, how you break the will of the people is do a war that nobody cares about when people are dying for no reason. And that's what happened to Vietnam was that, you know, all of us said that there's no reason for us to be there. This is not, these people are not going to, you know, pack up and sail across the United States in battleships and aircraft carriers and attack us. They're not going to send ballistic missiles, you know, onto our cities. Why are we fighting? You know, so that's, that was very interesting too. We can talk about that as well. Back to the article. The current pandemic war. So he calls it a pandemic war, which is interesting. He says the current pandemic war has all the markings of more traditional militaristic war, except that it is still unrecognized by those who are under attack. Yeah, that's us. It is the perfect stealth war. History is full of examples of stealth attacks that were extremely successful. The victims never saw the attackers until it was too late to resist. Yeah, that's like Hitler got elected in Germany. He was elected, by the way. I mean, duly elected by the laws of the day, he was elected. Now, what happened after that was anything but lawful, but he actually got to power being elected. So think about that. Back to the article. In today's war, the entire health system has been weaponized and turned into a giant Trojan horse. Obey, 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 it cries. Humiliate yourself by donning a face mask, by staying home and retreating from normal society. Mutilate yourself by giving up your job, closing your business, injecting harmful substances into your body. Meanwhile, dead bodies are piling up in record numbers. It's an old-fashioned genocide with a medical twist. Yeah, how often have we said on this show that COVID is a medical marketing holocaust? Think about that. They're killing mass numbers of people simply to make a profit. And so they're profiting off death. Your death. There's a story, America's Frontline Doctors, a member of Congress, Democrat, just lost his teenage daughter. And he was one of those, everybody has to get vaccinated. You can't work on my staff unless you're vaccinated. You know, don't be a knucklehead. It was his quote, Chastener. So I've got the article. I'll get to it. Yeah, his daughter died. And I'm pretty much guaranteeing that he insisted that his whole family, you know, get the jab. And he's lost a kid. So, you know, I mean, these things are happening. And, of course, it's not widely reported. They don't want to let you know that a member of Congress possibly lost their teenage daughter to COVID shots. But, you know, that's what's happening. Anyway, so let me get back to the article. It says, for a minute, forget case numbers, hospital beds, and epidemiological studies. The expose provides a backdoor look at what's going on by analyzing ambulance callouts, all of which are nicely recorded in detail. This is interesting. The National Health Service has confirmed, in response to a Freedom of Information request, that's what they call a FOIA, F-O-I-A, Freedom of Information request, ambulance callouts relating to immediate care required for a debilitating condition affecting the heart nearly doubled in the whole of 2021 and are still on the rise further in 2022. Gee, guess what happened in 2021? Of course, you know, the COVID jab came out, right? It says, but the most concerning published figures show that they have also doubled among people under the age of 30. Okay, I remember being under the age of 30, the healthiest I've ever been. Well, I'm still pretty good shape now, you know, after heart surgery, losing some weight and things like that. But I was a ball of fire, you know, under age 30. My 20s, I loved my 20s. I had so much fun. I had boundless energy. I mean, I could do anything. And so this is fascinating. So the idea of dropping dead under 30 would have been, it wouldn't have even registered on my brain. And I was flight instructing late 20s, early 30s. Until about 32, full-time instructor, flight instructor. I didn't have a care in the world. I thought nothing of going up in airplanes. I didn't have any dependents. It was just me, you know, kind of alienated from family already at that point. Nothing bothered me. You know, I felt immortal. You know, that's just the way it was, right? And so it's quite fascinating and horrifying at the same time that the numbers of people that are being killed under 30 is really tragic, especially I just talked about that teenage daughter, that member of Congress. Anyway, it says, what group is getting hit hardest? Young people under 30, those normally suited for military service, which is interesting from the folks that are leaving the military because they refuse to you know, risk death for no reason. The comment I made yesterday, or was it Monday? I think I was talking to Colonel Calvin Wimdish, who's running for House of Representatives from Florida, you know, the Orlando district. And I said, you know, tell me what you think. I said that the military people, you know, folks who go in the military, they swear an oath to defend, support and defend the Constitution, and they accept the fact that they may have to give their life for their country. I said, but you're not willing to give your life for nothing, for a stupid reason. He says, yep, that's pretty much it. And so this is the thing. This is why I think they pick on the military. You know, you got to follow orders. And then, of course, you know, the government says this is a lawful order to take the jab. Well, it's not a lawful order. But who determines whether an order is lawful or not? Well, the person has to comply with it. You know, and for the most part, 99.99% of orders are perfectly lawful. This one isn't. Anyway, back to the article. What group is getting hit? What group is getting hit hardest? Young people under 30, those normally suited for military service. There we go. To build a physical army. Overall, emergency calls for heart-related incidents has skyrocketed from the first day of emergency use authorization injections. Those are the EUAs. So the minute the jab hit the market, that's when things happen. Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Hill police officer who died shortly after January 6th. Initially, they said hit with a fire extinguisher from a Trump supporter. Then they said died of natural causes. I can, as far as I'm concerned, I think he died of a COVID shot because the Capitol Hill police got him in December of 2019. Everybody on Capitol Hill got the first jabs. And so it makes that by January, you know, a couple weeks later, that someone's going to die of a stroke from the jab. Then I could tell you that, of course, but that's my suspicion. In fact, we did a whole show on it. Back to the article. The tidal wave of propaganda, just like in any war, is designed to deceive, demoralize, and confuse. Prominent medical journals spit out headlines like CDC, FDA reports on VAERS, that's the Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System, VAERS. CDC, FDA reports on VAERS, no association between vaccines and increased mortality. I should get my news. I haven't played this for a while. Up here. So if we're going to do news, then I have to have my broadcast news theme. Make me sound like a journalist. Let me see if I can find this. You've heard it before. It's a non-copyright. Everybody uses this, but it sounds kind of cool. So now for the news. Yeah, it's actually radio. News on the spot. What if I can talk about it? I haven't tried that before. So now the news. CDC, FDA reports on VAERS, no association between vaccines and increased mortality. This is where I need a laugh track. The FDA did not say COVID-19 vaccines are causing more heart attacks. Another bullet point. COVID vaccines not linked to deaths. Major U.S. study finds. Okay, that's all total BS. And you know it's all BS, right? But those are the headlines, okay? Then another headline, too, where we're going to talk about monkeypox. I just learned that monkeypox is a disease spread predominantly by gay men, through gay men having sex with other gay men. This is a sexually transmitted disease, monkeypox. I got that from the CDC, from various articles, America's Frontline Doctors. In fact, there's an article in Atlantic I may get to, written by a gay man, who says, a gay man need a warning, monkeypox. And then they say, of course, and all the other stories say, well, it's not the only way it can be transmitted. It's not a gay disease. You know, then they go all through all these qualifiers. I'm like, this is AIDS. This is AIDS all over again. So pretty soon you're going to have the non-discrimination. So you can't discriminate against people with monkeypox because it's spread, you know, predominantly by gay men. Whereas COVID, you can discriminate against people that don't even have it with mask mandates, lockdowns, school closures, you know, stay-at-home orders and things like that. It's really fascinating. So if you're LGBTQ, you know, and you have a disease that spread in the community, then you can't be touched. But if you're not, then of course, even if you don't, you know, especially if you don't have it, you know, you have to wear masks on airplanes and everything else. So it's a really interesting world we live in, that it's okay to discriminate against some people, but not others. Anyway, back to the article. They all state that your eyes are lying to you. Rather, you should trust the propaganda that sows just enough doubt that you don't dare open your mouth in public about such silly things as ambulance call-outs for heart-related emergencies. Anybody has any personal information on this, feel free to give me a shout, 215-383-3832. Back to the article. The writer, that's Patrick, has continuously stated since December 18, 2015, that technocracy declared war on the entire human population of the world. I wrote, technocracy is the same nefarious ideology that enabled Adolf Hitler in the 1930s. Nazi Germany used advanced technology to enslave and kill millions of its own citizens. This hasn't happened here yet, but this is the direction we are headed. And then he says, we have arrived. That's what I wrote back in 2015. Okay, that's where we're headed. Now he says, we've arrived. What level of stupidity and ignorance do people have to exhibit to not see what is going on here? 215-383-3832. That's the first of our bad news. Let me get you more bad news. Where's my other article? I want to, so many articles here. Natural news. Now, you can't put natural news on Facebook because they automatically post that you can't do it. You get your account canceled, censored, things like that, which is why we have a bill, which if you haven't read it and sent it into Congress and media, we need your help. Okay. So it's on Section 230 and Section 230 revisions that will totally eliminate big tech censorship by making their liability conditional. On liability immunity conditional on not touching your account, not touching what you post, and not touching the arrangement of search engines beyond the raw number of hits. So any manipulation of search engines, your account, or what you post takes away their liability immunity, and they can have their asses sued off. That's how you cure big tech. You know, when we get some of the folks that that are higher up in the political spectrum, shall we say, on the show, we're going to talk about that bill. The two big ones are that one and full product liability on vaccine makers. How long do you think vaccines would be on the market? Even though they're not vaccines. How long do you think, I say that out of convenience, how long do you think these things would be on the market if they were fully liable for the results of what's going on? Yeah, seconds? They'd be off the market so fast, make your head spin. And people, why are they off the market? What, because they're liable for it now? Oh, isn't that interesting? That would save millions of lives. All right. Natural news. Defending health, life, and liberty. Finance, climate, diplomacy, science, medicine, education, and psychology. The, quote, experts are wrong about almost everything. Wednesday, June 8th, from Mike Adams. Mike Adams is the editor of Natural News. He says, have you noticed how the so-called experts are usually incompetent morons? We have experts in finance who don't know that printing trillions of dollars causes inflation. We have experts in education and psychology who think mutilating the genitals of children is something to celebrate in the name of pride. We have experts in diplomacy who think Russia has no right to its own national interests. And we have experts in science and medicine whose vaccines are so deadly, they have to resort to censorship and paid propaganda to cover up all the vaccine deaths. The experts, air quotes please, the experts, it turns out, are wrong about how do we get to this place? Because people prefer comfortable lies over hard truths. Or as we say on the show here, assumptions are stronger than truth. It's basically the same thing. Mike Adams says people prefer comfortable lies over hard truths. So back to the article. So the most incompetent experts who are willing to lie get promoted to positions of influence and power. Yeah, I can think of somebody like that, right? The more they lie, the higher they rise in the system. Anyone who tells the truth, on the other hand, gets S-H-you-know-what canned. at least you put a hashtag in the middle of it. Yeah. So, well, yeah. And that's true. You know, if you tell the truth, you're out. Why do you think Dr. Fascist is still there running the health stuff? Because he's the greatest liar in government. He's good at it. He's really good at it. You know, he took over for Trump in the White House coronavirus task force based on the Obama playbook of how to handle something that they caused. It's really quite fascinating. I have to talk to Trump about that one day. That's going to be my first question, as to why you gave up control of COVID to Dr. Fascist. We'll ask him directly, too, because that's what we need to do. Back to the article. Tell the truth about money, printing, and you aren't welcome anywhere in the realm of finance. Tell the truth about vaccine injuries, and you get blacklisted from the field of medicine. That's why we have our doctors panel on Thursdays, you know. Dr. Mikovits, I think Dr. Mikovits has to miss this Thursday. I think she's got other stuff to do. But Dr. Mikovits, Dr. Thorpe, Dr. Artis, Dr. Marble, who I think is back this week. So it was working out well. And anybody else we can drag into the expert world, we're going to hear from tomorrow in our three-hour, you know, freewheeling discussion. All these people have been blacklisted and their careers totally disrupted. And the medical board's gone after them and they risk their careers every day. You know, why? Because they're telling the truth. But you don't hear that. You hear the lies. Next paragraph. To tell the truth about money. Oh, yeah, I already read that one. So let me. I didn't say this one. I'm sorry. Tell the truth about money printing, and you aren't welcome anywhere in the realm of finance. Oh no, I did read that one. I'm sorry. Tell the truth about. Oh, here. You know, I didn't finish it. That's why. Tell the truth about vaccine injuries, and you get blacklisted from the field of medicine. And the last sentence. Tell the truth about transgenderism, and you lose your job as a school counselor or university professor. Yeah, of course we call it here what transgenderism really is. It's a personal problem. It's a mental health issue. It's not a civil right. Big difference, okay? If you start making personal problems civil rights, then, is anxiety and depression, is that a civil right? Yeah. I mean, it's a personal problem, okay? All right, back to the article. Anyone who tells the truth about almost anything, gender, food science, climate, free energy, geoengineering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is banished from having any influence in society. Well, we're going to change that at Action Radio, trust me. Article says, so now, as a result of all this, we are ruled by the cognitively retarded who cannot process reality and have no ability to make decisions in meaningful ways that benefit society. Let me read that again. The result of all this, we are ruled, I call it an idiocracy, okay, ruled by the idiot. You know, so now, as a result of all this, we are ruled by the cognitively retarded who cannot process reality and have no ability to make decisions in meaningful ways that benefit society. I'll give you a perfect example. They've starved us of energy, starved us of oil, starved us of all petroleum products, coal, oil, natural gas, starved us of even electricity by raising the prices so much. Okay, but the main thing is they've starved us of petroleum. What's their solution? We got to go out and buy an electric car. Well, what generates the electricity? Petroleum. You know, that's an electric gas tank you've got there. Okay, what do you think fuels that gas tank? Petroleum, mostly. Petroleum, nuclear, and maybe some solar and wind, but for the most part, you know, this is their ideology is so warped. These people are so stupid, so cognitively retarded. I kind of like that term. Right? I don't like the term retarded in general, but applied to so-called experts in government, it seems to make a lot of sense. These people are so cognitively retarded. They will tell you that the solution to the energy that they have stolen, the petroleum that they have stolen, a clean fuel that is renewable because the earth makes it and because it completes the carbon cycle, putting carbon dioxide back in the air so plants can breathe it. Necessary. I think that the burning of petroleum is actually necessary to our life, to the carbon cycle, to plants. How's that for a thought? Not only is it not a pollutant, it's necessary. We need to burn carbon. So think about that. Think about the fact that the internal combustion engine came along at a time in our history, you know, where we had the need to move, you know, mass numbers of people, mass number of places by land, sea, and air. Think about that for a second. And then, of course, the jet engine and everything else that came along, rocket engines, the whole bit. But look where we are now, replacing carbon in the air. Millions of years of oil building up under the earth that was either made abiotically or made with so-called fossils, you know, algae, plants, things like that, biotically. All that carbon locked up, all those millions of years, need to get back in the atmosphere. How did it happen? The internal combustion engine. Think about that. All right. So that is a fascinating thought that maybe in the intelligent design of the world, you know, that maybe that it was necessary to have the Industrial Revolution to replace the carbon that had been locked up in the plants and the ground all that time. How's that for a thought? Try that on your liberal environmentalists. Say not only is carbon dioxide not a pollutant, it's necessary for life to complete the carbon cycle. That'll freak them out. they'll look at you like you're some kind of an idiot. But, you know, you can just go for it. See what happens. All right. So run by an idiocracy, the cognitively retarded. The people that think that, you know, the solution to a pandemic that's not a pandemic, where we have easy cures like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, the cure is to kill even more people, far more people, millions more people, with a synthetic jab of an experimental product that no one knows what it does. Hmm. Interesting. All right. The article said almost done. This has all happened before, of course. And the next step in this scenario is the total collapse of the empire. That's exactly what's coming from America and much of Western civilization, it turns out. Then he gets carried away. Okay. Now, Mike Adams is an interesting guy. And I talked about this with Josie. So this is something I'm going to do a show on at some point. I want to sort of gather more evidence. But there's a point where the reality makes sense. Okay, everything Mike Adams said in that article makes sense. All right. Then they cross this line and they get into this conspiracy theory. And I don't use that term lightly. Okay, I'm serious about this. That there is a branch of conservatives. You know, as one of my own reporters, Jessie Cossie, who does the Latino Report, love her to death. She's wonderful. She's an amazing person. But we disagree on this completely. She says, I'm on plan B. She's on plan A. Plan A is that the military and the intelligence community are going to come riding in on a white horse and install Trump back in power, and that thousands of people are being arrested. We just have to wait for the right time. We have to gather the evidence, and then everything's going to be made right by this military, you know, intelligence dictatorship. And I'm saying, that's nuts. That's the wrong solution, folks. You don't replace one dictatorship with another. And yet there's a whole branch of people out there that believe this. I think it's a bunch of crap. I think it's nonsense. And I don't want it, even if it is true. I don't want to replace a coup of idiots, of the idiocracy, with a coup of the military and the intelligence community. Because the intelligence community thinks they're smarter than everybody. The military thinks they're more powerful than everybody. And directed in the right ways, they are and they should be. That's a good thing. Okay, directed against the American people for their own purposes for power is not. As we know, all power corrupts. And people can say they won't take power and abuse it when they get it, but very few people actually do that. The only person that comes to mind is George Washington. George Washington served two terms. He could have been king. I mean, there are enough people who wanted to make him king again. You know, and he's like, why do we fight this revolution? It's like Richard Harris, if you ever see the movie Cromwell. Why did we execute a king, Charles I, to appoint another king? Well, England needs a king. We have to function with a king. No, we don't. We have parliament. We have the people. Okay. Well, parliament only functions if the people are citizen legislators, which is where Action Radio comes in. See, everything comes back to Action Radio. It's quite interesting. Let me check live chat here, see if anyone wants to talk to us on live chat. I don't have any phone calls. Phone calls are going to start at the top of the hour. We're going to get crazy. So I'm getting all my chat in now. I'm glad I covered those articles because I've been meaning to do that for a while. So let's take out that one. Let me tell you our new Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on Federalist number 12 and maybe a couple more things. And then we'll get back, and Wendy's coming up at 8 o'clock. So it's nice to have an hour to chat. I haven't had a chance to do this for a while because we get so busy with the calls and with the guests all the time. And I love callers and guests. I love callers and guests. All right, let's play this now, back in a little bit, and I'll have one more article before we get to Wendy at the top of the hour. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Even the title of Federalist Number 12 is bad. The utility of the Union in respect to revenue. First of all, the Union was not created for Alexander Hamilton, who wrote Federalist No. 12, to rule it. Nor was the Union created for his utility, nor for the Union to generate revenue. Hamilton says, "The prosperity of commerce is now perceived and acknowledged by all enlightened statesmen to be the most useful as well as the most productive source of national wealth, and has accordingly become a primary object of their political cares." Such grand assumptions. All enlightened statesmen? So those who disagree must be stupid by comparison. Commerce is supposed to bring wealth. That's why we engage in it. But commerce is for private wealth, entrepreneurial wealth, investor wealth, and more. It is not for governed national wealth unless the commerce is nationalized. Maybe that's what Hamilton had in mind when he talked about commerce becoming, quote, a primary object of their political cares. Hamilton and the Federalists appear to believe that not only the Constitution and the federal government should serve elitists like himself, but the commerce of the nation should also. I can see why the anti-federalists were so popular, and why people are encouraged by government to study only the Federalist Papers. Consider this paragraph. The ability of a country to pay taxes must always be proportioned in a great degree to the quantity of money in circulation and to the celerity with which it circulates. Commerce, contributing to both these objects, must of necessity render the payment of taxes easier and facilitate the requisite supplies to the treasury. In other words, don't tax more than a certain portion of the money supply so taxes flow in easily. So the goal here is to tax not on the necessary expenditures of government, but on how great a proportion the federal government can tax to facilitate the supplies of money to the treasury most easily. It's also interesting that Hamilton does not trust the states at all regarding commerce or anything else, which is ironic because it's the states that delegate all power to the federal government through the Constitution. But Hamilton is so contemptuous of the states. He thinks their purpose is to conspire to commit commerce in a way the federal government could not tax. Again, according to Hamilton, like people, businesses are to serve the federal government. He says, "The relative situation of these states, the number of rivers with which they are intersected, and of bays that wash their shores, the facility of communication in every direction, the affinity of language and manners, the familiar habits of intercourse, all these are circumstances that would conspire to render an illicit trade between them a matter of little difficulty, and would ensure frequent evasions of the commercial regulations of each other." Stating things not at all in evidence, that they are in fact evident, Hamilton once again claims that only a national, not federal, national, as in a top-down supremacist government, can be trusted to collect the taxes and keep the treasury full. Whereas the states, which are sovereign entities, will break into confederacies and ruin all Hamilton's plans to run the economy with the national government. He concludes, "It is therefore evident that one national government would be able, at much less expense, to extend the duties on imports beyond comparison further than would be practicable to the states separately or to any partial confederacies." The only thing that is evident to me is that Alexander Hamilton wants a strong national government so his fellow elitists can control the economy and put away money in the treasury based on how much money they can get away with putting in the treasury and use for their own purposes. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. from the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
See how much fun we have here? I mean, everything, I mean, there's so many serious problems out there, but we do have to have a little fun. And so for our newer listeners that are joining, especially from the doctor shows, the world's greatest doctor panel is tomorrow. And again, we'll see who I can gather for that. It really is informal. And it's, in fact, you guys can call in too. So if you have a question, predominance of the show is going to go to the doctors because they get a chance to really engage with each other. And that's what I'm looking for. And that's really kind of cool when that works out. I mean, it's amazing to listen to the interchange. So Thursdays are becoming our world's greatest doctor panel. All right, I got something else for you now here. This is actually from CNN.
Gee, Greg, what are you reporting on something from CNN for? They're not conservative.
No, they're not. And neither am I. I'm more constitutional independent, but it seemed to fit. So CNN Business. This is from Paul R. LaMonica, CNN Business, updated May 12, 2022. Okay, so that's last month, I know. But think about this. Look at the headline. More than $7 trillion has been wiped out from the stock market this year. So it's probably more than that now. But the losses are so great. And I guess they call them those paper losses. In other words, if the market's at 40,000 and it goes to 20%, it'd be 32,000, all right? It'd be a 20% loss. And then they're saying, $7 trillion. Anyway, maybe I don't know where I got that 20% figure from. I'll think about it. Anyway, point being, $7 trillion. So in other words, that's 20% loss. If you go from a 40,000 Dow to a 32,000 Dow, you know, you've lost 20%. Okay. It's only a loss if you sell your stock. So the value of the stock being held, that, you know, as opposed to the value that you sell it at. So you don't, you know, in other words, if you buy low and sell even lower, you lose money. If you buy low and your stock goes up really high, and then it comes crashing down, but not, you know, to the point where you bought it, you can still make money, just not as much. It's really confusing how this works. So when they say $7 trillion, it's not that $7 trillion is physically gone. It's the price of what it would have been, you know, if people had sold all that stock. You know, so $7 trillion, well, let me see what they say. But point being that the market has lost a huge amount of money. So if everybody sold when it was at its high, they would have had a whole bunch of money. If they sell now, all investors would lose about $7 trillion, which is quite fascinating. Here's the article. Somebody cue the stock market's park ranger. Bears are having a picnic on Wall Street. Is it talking about bull and bear markets? Bull markets are good, bear markets are bad. How they came to that conclusion, I have no idea. Sounds like a Teddy Roosevelt kind of thing. Anyway, well, he liked bears. All right, I digress. Article says, the meltdown of 2022. You don't hear that coming out of the Brandon insurrection, do you? The meltdown of 2022 has wiped out more than $7 trillion in market value from the blue chip stocks in the S&P 500. The index is down nearly 18%. Well, it's pretty close to 20. All right. The index is down nearly 18% since the end of December. The S&P 500 is now barely above bear market levels. That is, here's where it comes from, a 20% decline from recent closing high, following a 0.1% drop Thursday. Okay. So yeah, 20% decline. So that's it. So whatever the Dow was and what it is now, 20% is massive, massive drop in, and they say market value. So in other words, if the stock sold at the high, you know, that'd be your maximum. If they're selling now, they're going to be 20% below that. And that's about $7 trillion. So 20, 7, 5, 5. So there's like 350 trillion. Wait a minute. Market's lost 7 trillion and that's 20% of its value. Then the value of the whole thing, so 20% times 5, so 7 fives are 35, so $35 trillion. Huh. So the market has $35 trillion worth of value? That's interesting. Okay, that's just rough figuring, right? So if you figure that the market's dropped 20% and it's $7 trillion in market value, that means the market itself is worth $35 trillion, which is interesting because what's the national debt? $30 trillion. So if we took the entire value of the stock market, sold it, and pay the national debt, we'd only have $5 trillion left. Huh. Think about that sometime. Back to the article. The Dow Industrial Average, which fell about 104 points or 0.3% Thursday, is down more than 13% this year as well. The tech stocks have been hit particularly hard. The NASDAQ did manage to eke out a slight gain Thursday, but it has plunged 27% this year, putting it deep into bear market territory. Nearly $3 trillion of the S&P's 500 market cap drop is from the tech sector. This is where I need Derek Park to explain this to me. So if he's not on vacation or travel or business stuff this weekend, this Friday, we're going to talk about this, about the stock market. I think I'll keep this article and send it to him. I may have already. I don't know. Anyway, shares of tech leaders, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, owner Alphabet, Facebook, parent Meta Platforms, and Elon Musk's Tesla are all deeply in red. Netflix, down more than 70%, is the worst performer in the S&P 500 this year. Well, maybe we should kick him out, put someone else in there. He said, the article says the rapid plunge is raising. Now, this is CNN. These are the folks that love the Brandon insurrection. Okay, this is why this is so fascinating, right? The rapid plunge is raising alarm bells on Main Street, too, with worries that the U.S. economy may be losing steam following a strong recovery from the depths of the brief pandemic-induced recession. Okay, what's key about that? What's key about that is that CNN says it is a pandemic-induced recession. Think about that. You couldn't have said that last year. You couldn't have said that. You certainly could have said it in 2020. You know, but now CNN says a pandemic-induced recession. What does that mean? That means by locking down the economy, mostly Democrat, but not all, governors who sent everybody home, who closed down everything they could, except the big stores that contribute to their campaigns and stuff, you know, the Walmarts and, you know, Targets and the big grocery chains, things like that. They all stayed open, okay? But the mom-and-pop middle class, you know, entrepreneurial class, those folks are all shut down. And those are the folks that all lost their business. A pandemic-induced recession. That is a fascinating term coming out of CNN. Also, it says, according to data from research from Bespoke Investment Group, never heard of them, B-E-S-P-O-K-E, the NASDAQ has plummeted more than 20% in the past 30 trading days. A drop of that magnitude has only happened 11 times before, and 9 of those declines were associated with recessions. Well, this one is too. One thing we learned when we talked to Derek Park, a recession is something, because all these they have what they call lagging economic indicators. In other words, they show you what has already happened. So by the time you learn that you're in a recession, it's already been here for quite a while. We are definitely in a recession. I'll tell you right now. Negative growth. But the economy shrank, you know, like 1-point-some-odd percent, 1.4%, and that's the second time it's done it. That's the definition of recession. When the economy shrinks, yeah, that's a recession. All right. Bespoke analysts said in another report earlier this week that the NASDAQ 100, or so-called QQQs, sounds like QAnon, is off to the worst start for any year ever. Well, this is what happens when you have a dictatorship, folks. You know, when the government thinks it can run everything, it can't run anything, and it screws everything up, but they keep the privileges for themselves. That's what a dictatorship is. Right? The article says, still, there are hopes that a bottom may soon be in sight. Oh, really? Bespoke analysts said that prices can remain oversold for an extended period of time, but they don't stay that way forever. Well, nothing stays that way forever, dudes. Yeah, just to say that, nothing stays the same forever. Okay, well, that's not really a brilliant statement. That's kind of like everybody knows that. Investors are waiting for a so-called capitulation, a moment where it seems like everyone has finally thrown in the proverbial towel. When sentiment is seemingly at its lowest, that might be the time finally to start buying again. Oh, I buy now. I'm no financial advisor. I'm not. If I were, I'd be rich. But seems to me that you buy on the way down, and you know, when the stocks get above, you know, where you bought it, you know, then you can sell them and make a profit. That's kind of how it works. This is the market. All right, anyway, you get the idea. All right, I'm into it, but you get the idea. It sucks. I mean, it really totally sucks. All right, so that's what's going on there. So you don't hear Brandon talking about that, or the spokesperson, the what was she, gay black immigrant? I mean, she's a threefer, right? But she always has to read from notes, and if she doesn't have a note, if she doesn't have her talking point pre you know, written for her, then she can't seem to say anything. She's an idiot, and she shouldn't be there. I don't care what her you know, affirmative action qualifications are. That's kind of fascinating too. This article was a little bit interesting too. This is from The Atlantic, which is a liberal magazine by Jim Downs. Jim Downs is a gay man, and he says gay men need a specific warning about monkeypox. I know he's a gay man because he says so, you know, partway through the article. It says tiptoeing around the issue carries its own risks. This is by Jim Downs, and he says, this is May 28th, so last month. Jim Downs, oh, here we go. Here's the byline, which they're putting on top, which is unusual. A history professor at Gettysburg College is the author of Maladies of Empire, How Colonialism, Slavery, and War Transformed Medicine. Oh, you can't wait to do that. That's got to be a page turner. Sorry, Jim. He says the disproportionate number of cases in the recent monkeypox outbreak have shown up among gay and bisexual men. And, ooh, now that's interesting. How many more men are dying from COVID, maybe from COVID vaccines. maybe from monkeypox. They're not telling us. I don't know. I mean, just maybe that. No, I don't think that's related. I'm speculating here. All right, let me start again. A disproportionate number of cases in the recent monkeypox outbreak have shown up among gay and bisexual men. And as public health authorities investigate possible links to sexual or other close physical contact at the Pride event in the Canary Islands, a sauna in Madrid, and other gay venues in Europe, government officials are trying hard not to single out a group that endured terrible stigma at the height of America's AIDS crisis. So this is AIDS too, okay? Not because it's the same disease. It's not. And I'm no AIDS expert. That's a Judy Mikovits thing. She knows more about it than probably anybody, especially having to suffer Dr. Fascist and AZT and the things that didn't work. When Bactrim, a perfectly viable drug that actually dealt with AIDS rather successfully, was banned so they could sell AZT at a higher profit. Gee, does that sound familiar? Oh, I don't know. Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, cheap, easily available, approved. I mean, literally approved for decades. Okay. Can't have those. We have remdesivir, an old failed Ebola medicine at $3,200 a pop instead of 20 cents, you know, for hydroxychloroquine. Fascinating how these things just keep coming around. Dr. Fascist is playing the same tune again. Back to the article. Experience shows that stigmatizing rhetoric can quickly disable evidence-based response by stoking cycles of fear, driving people away from health services, impeding efforts to identify cases, and encouraging ineffective punitive measures. And that's Matthew Cavanaugh, Deputy Executive Director of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS. Why are we talking about HIV/AIDS and monkeypox in the same conversation? That alone is fascinating, right? For many years, following the outbreak of HIV, the fear of being judged or shamed has dissuaded some gay men from being tested. So this is what they're talking about. This is really a for gay men article saying, guys, if this is what you do, you know, you need to get tested for monkeypox. Okay. Well, what is that? What are they not saying? Well, that means if you're heterosexual, you probably don't need to be tested for monkeypox. Okay. Same thing with AIDS. AIDS was spread predominantly among gay men and IV drug users. It's a blood-to-blood transfer. Sexual contact and IV needles. I'm guessing monkeypox will also be spread by IV needles, okay? Which puts all those clean needle programs, you know, we'll see what they say about this. I'm kind of curious. Anyway, he says, and then he says, but as a gay man who studies the history of infectious disease, that's interesting too, I worry that public health leaders are not doing enough to directly alert men who have sex with men about monkeypox. That's interesting. He says, gay men are not the only people at risk. Well, they always say that. But they do need to know that right now the condition appears to be spreading most actively within their community. This is from a gay man writing this, okay? He says, in recent days, CDC officials have been acknowledging this forthrightly. Director Rochelle Walensky noted Thursday that of 9 monkeypox cases identified in the United States as of midweek, most are among men who have sex with men. There you go. It's all there, black and white. Okay. So do we need a monkeypox vaccine? No. We're talking about isolated community that can prevent it by a bunch of things, you know. And so I leave it to the public health officials to go further on that. But it's not what you think it is. Okay. So, you know, unless you're a gay man having sex with other gay men, you know, you're probably not going to catch it. This stuff goes on. It never stops. And so that's enough on that. All right, what's going on here? What else can I report? I got a few more minutes before. I got about 3 minutes before Wendy gets. 2 minutes before Wendy gets here. And let me see if I can find you one more little article here. I'm going to save my gasoline articles. Tomorrow I'm going to spend some time talking about how we can either make our own gasoline, synthetic gasoline, or get rid of ethanol and maybe have Florida, see if we can get Florida drilling for our own gasoline. Or refining it. You know, Florida needs to build an oil refinery. What do you guys think about that? You know, my fellow Floridians, should we build a refinery here? A major refinery has not been built in the United States since 1976. And I was reading something recently that said because of NIMBY, not in my backyard, okay, and the environmentalists. Well, you can't have, you can't do that. You know, that would mean people would use more oil. Oh, well, we can't have that. Well, yeah, you can because it completes the carbon cycle and it's environmentally necessary. Oh, that's so much fun. Here's an article from MLN in my last couple of minutes. Illegal votes are far more dangerous than illegal guns. I'm getting a lot of coverage today. This is great. May 18th, 2022. Oh, for those of you that remember the show when it first came out, I had to do these two-hour monologues because, you know, the listenership was so small, nobody called in. I didn't have any reporters. So I talked to myself for 2 hours. Yeah, glad those days are gone. MLN, USA, illegal votes are far more dangerous than illegal guns. Illegal votes threaten the very structure of the United States. They place organized and incompetence, yeah, the idiocracy, in power over the criminal justice system. At the national level, they can determine who controls the military and the intelligence services. Oh, isn't that interesting, considering our conspiracy chat earlier? This places all of society at risk. Agreed. back to the article. If you doubt illegal vote trafficking is a problem, see 2,000 Mules. It removes 95% of any doubt. Once a vote is paid for or leaves the proper chain of custody, it is an illegal vote. Trafficking in illegal votes has long been a feature in Democrat politics, particularly in crowded urban areas where it is most easily accomplished. City governments control the police in urban areas. It becomes very difficult for police to enforce voting laws that are subverted by the political machine. The machine controls police salaries and promotions. The political machine appoints its leadership. Immigrants in Democrat-controlled urban areas are particularly susceptible to having their votes trafficked. They often come from countries where political corruption is expected. It was true in the Tammany Hall. It was true with Tammany Hall. It was true today. So Tammany Hall, I'm not an expert on Tammany Hall. I believe this is something in Boston where the Union Hall ran everything. If you wanted a job, you had to talk to the Union Hall. You know, if you wanted to run for office, you talk to Tammany Hall. Tammany Hall dispersed the money, dispersed the jobs, dispersed the political control, dispersed everything. Maybe we should do a show on that and take a look at that. Anyway, back to the article, almost done. As the media has become an arm of the Democrat Party, trafficking in illegal votes has become easier. The local police are controlled by the people who gained power through vote trafficking. The media is unwilling to expose the people whose politics they approved of. The 2020 election shows the severe danger from illegal vote trafficking. An illicit and critical criminal administration has come to power, propped up by a media which has become the propaganda arm of the state. Well, I'm glad they're saying this so plainly. I mean, really am, because that's what the problem is. You know, and these folks are good enough to say so. So you want to consult MOLand for more such articles, feel free. So here are the results. An insane method of extracting our troops from Afghanistan. $80 billion of equipment turned over to the Taliban, the Chinese, and anyone who is willing to go there and pay. This is what happens with a fraudulent election. This is what they're saying. Okay. Next one, a horrific war in Ukraine, which would have been prevented if the legitimate candidate were elected, that being Donald Trump. Tens of thousands dead as a result. The war is ongoing. The administration, oh, I say the insurrection appears unconcerned with the threat of nuclear retaliation. We talked about that yesterday with Dr. Peter Pry. Okay, see yesterday's show, second hour. Next bullet point, hundreds of billions of dollars wasted on schemes meant to enrich the politically connected, which result in inflation, impoverishing the poor and middle class. Yeah, that's the green and the Build Back Better and all that, and the stimulus and the paying people not to work. That's what all that's about. Next one, direct attacks on the Bill of Rights to include freedom of speech and the right to keep and bear arms. Yeah, we talked about that yesterday with Cheryl Todd. While not yet successful, these are meant to keep the current regime in power. Next, historic increases in the homicide rate resulting from the deliberate demonization of the police. Several thousand are dead as a result. And economic chaos, which I just covered, economic chaos, which results in impoverishment for tens of millions of Americans. So there you go. Then it says illegal guns do far less damage. There are relatively few illegal guns in the United States. Nearly all the guns in the United States are legal. Okay, now this is going to be interesting. You'll see what we're talking about here. Just because a criminal has it does not make the gun illegal. Makes the gun possession illegal and the use of that gun illegal, but the gun itself is not illegal. And yet that's what the left is saying. Guns themselves are illegal. Article says guns that are illegal for most people to possess fall into three broad categories. One, there are fully automatic firearms, of which there is a limited supply by law. Some illegal automatics are smuggled in and some are made at home or in small shops. So you can actually make a semi-auto, a fully automatic gun. It's illegal and it's dangerous and it's stupid. But you can do it. All right. I don't recommend it. Don't do it. But on the other hand, I think fully automatic firearms should be just as legal as any other firearm because they come under the Second Amendment. All right. So that's how that goes. Now, would there be severe penalties against using a fully automatic weapon? I think absolutely. You know, up until execution. Then that might be, you want to dissuade people from ever doing that. But would it be a good way to protect your home? Maybe against a dictatorial government? An invading force of home invaders and things like that? Yeah, I think it's perfectly valid, thing for that. But it doesn't matter whether it's valid for self-defense or not. It's a firearm. Therefore, keeping and bearing it is covered by the Second Amendment. That's the first class, fully automatic firearms. Second class here, there are short-barreled rifles and shotguns, which require a $200 tax and a significant regulatory burden to legally possess. What the hell difference does the barrel matter? Oh, it's more concealable. Okay, well, that doesn't matter either. What matters is how you use it. Again, Separate out use from keeping and bearing, and you'll understand these articles much better. Article says they are exceedingly simple to manufacture. A handsaw in 15 minutes is sufficient to shorten the barrel on a shotgun. A little more time, that's how they got Randy Weaver, by the way. A little more time is required to shorten the barrel on a rifle. Use a power cutter, and the time is reduced to a minute. Illegal short barrel rifles and shotguns are crude pistols. Ordinary pistols are legal, plentiful, and effective. Yeah, I mean, the legal guns do a great job. They're supposed to for self-defense. You know, for criminals, they do a great job also, and that's the problem. Illegal short barrel rifles and shotguns are crude. Okay, I already said that. Ordinary rifles, pistols, and shotguns can be made illegal to possess by removing an existing serial number. Removing the serial number does nothing to make them more lethal. Outside of those three categories, removing the serial number, shorting the barrel, and a fully automatic firearm. Those are the three categories of illegal firearms, okay? And this, the article says, outside of those three categories, there are a few extremely rare examples that are difficult to legally possess. I'm talking about some other 50 caliber big things. All right. But basically, that's it. So what the point of this whole article is that boats are more dangerous. Illegal boats are far more dangerous because they stole a country. You know, a criminal might rob a bank or carjack a car, and those things are bad. Rob a 7-Eleven, things like that, those are bad. But they don't terrorize everybody in the whole nation, whereas illegal voting leading to a dictatorship does. There's not one person in this country that isn't at least concerned, probably fearful, but at least concerned with the way things are going. And this is something I want to talk about a bit too. I'm talking about this with some friends. The problem with the gasoline prices, it's bad enough that they're the highest ever, but that's not the real problem. The real problem is they keep going up. There is no end in sight. There is no crisis you can point to because we all know the Putin-Ukraine thing is a bluff. That's a bunch of nonsense. That's from the Idiocracy. We all know that there is no one event. There is no, you know, major war blocking of the Strait of Hormuz, the blocking access to, you know, Middle East oil, OPEC oil. Venezuela used to be in OPEC too, by the way. Not anymore because they don't produce any oil there. They have their own problems. But the point is that everybody knows this is a self-inflicted problem. This is energy suicide. This is energy treason by our own insurrection, the Idiocracy, stealing our oil and then begging other countries because their ideology won't let them produce oil here, refine oil here, transport oil here, build pipelines here, you know, frack here. So they know they need oil to keep the country going, but they can't have Americans produce it because that goes against their ideology that we have to be green. So their insanity, their absolute insanity that they know we need oil to make the country run and yet they won't let Americans produce it, that kind of insanity is where we are right now. Oh, good time for Wendy to join us. You know, I think I've said my bit. Let's get on to onto the Oh My God report. But that's where it is. We are led by an idiocracy of insane people whose ideology is so warped and they are so cognitively retarded, as Mike Adams said, that they think that if we just go solar and wind and we produce electricity, you know, from the very things that normally go in your gas tank, you know, fuel, gas, petroleum, the things that they're using to create electricity are the very things that they are banning us to use directly. It's insanity.
Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick.
Oh my God, it's Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
How are you doing this morning?
I've been talking to myself for the previous hour. It's been fun. It's a good chance to get some articles. I can now clean out the bottom of my computer with all these things I've wanted to talk about. I always keep them reserved just for these occasions. And so I'm having a great time. We got our World's Greatest Doctor panel tomorrow. We had Cheryl Todd from Gun Freedom Radio called in from Arizona yesterday. We had Mama B on Monday. This show is exploding. We've got a whole bunch of new listeners in Canada and Australia, and life's great. You know, everything we talked about is happening. It's just, you know, like everything else, longer than I want. I have no patience, none, absolutely none. So I'm fine. So we'll have to find out what scripture says about – what's that now?
So we have that in common.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, we'll have to do a show on what the scripture says about patience. And they say patience is a virtue. Well, I think what I have is a curse that, you know, it's ADHD. Better, faster, sooner. Yes. Fast food is still too slow.
Well, yeah, the world saying is patience is a virtue. It is a good thing, but it's not a virtue. It is actually one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit. And, you know, don't pray for patience. you'll end up in every line anywhere you could possibly think of. You'll end up in it. But, yeah.
Thank you for clearing that up. So all you folks meditating, keep meditating, but don't figure I'm going to be sitting around, you know, saying om all day to get enlightenment. Ain't going to happen. I'm not that patient.
You and me both, brother.
Exactly. Pianki's on the line, too. Let me make his line live. He didn't want to talk to me, but he does want to talk to you, apparently, so that's a good thing. Good morning, Pianki.
Good morning, Pianki.
Good morning. Good morning.
Oh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, ma'am. How are you doing?
I'm doing. If I got any better, I probably couldn't stand it. But that's.
Well, you sound like you're doing fine. Sound like you're having a lot of fun.
World's
well, you know,
most
you make
infectious
the best
giggle.
Of your situation.
World's most infectious.
Well, let me
giggle.
Tell you. Let me tell you something. There's nothing gooder for the soul than laughter. Keep on laughing.
This is true.
It's good for you.
Well, that's exactly right. And matter of fact. Scripture says in Proverbs, it says, a merry heart does good like a medicine. So, you know what? Joy is a good thing for you, and laughter is a good thing.
Stuff the dentist used to give to you before they pulled your teeth?
Oh, the laughing gas?
Do they still do that or no?
Yeah, they do, but you know, it never worked on me, unfortunately. So,
naturally? we got to get to your reporter. We're just going to have too much fun here, and I know we've got a limited time because we have another substitute person coming in for Chansey at 8:30. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wanted to tackle one of the 700 topics that we have gathered in the last two shows between us, but. The Lord just really put it on my heart last night that I needed to talk about responsibility and what that really means. Because, we kind of throw that word around, and it doesn't mean anything in this current administration.
Well, that's because it's not an administration. It's an idiocracy coup dictatorship run by a complete moron who thinks he's president. That's the saddest part. He actually thinks he's president. That's a really scary.
So what I was thinking about and which aspect of responsibility there is, I just wanted to kind of throw out there because so many people go to church once a week and assume that it is the pastor's responsibility to teach them everything they need to know about the scriptures. And and that's just not the way it goes. You are not excused from knowing the scriptures and what you should be getting out of it because you go to church. That's not the way it is. And half the time what's being taught from the pulpit is not correct. It's got little half-truths in it. And sometimes it's bald-faced lies. But, it's just false doctrine. But how do you know that? How does anybody know what is being taught is false or true unless they know the scriptures?
Because that's interesting.
Because we are to judge our teachers. Against the scriptures. We're to judge ourselves against the scriptures. The scriptures are truth. So, and that doesn't change. You can do anything you want. You can say anything you want. You can do anything you want, but it doesn't change the truth of the scriptures. You can agree with it. You can disagree with it. You can hate it. You can absolutely ignore it, but it doesn't change it. It's still truth because truth stands.
The Constitution, the Bill of Rights are written exactly the same way. And all these folks that are trying to misinterpret and change around, all the courts that are trying to say they have the power to interpret, which they don't, and give their own spin and everything, this is very similar. And so I think on a political level, we have exactly the same problems that you have on a God level of priests, pastors, ministers saying that I am the truth. I am the way, despite what you read. it's pretty amazing.
That's exactly right.
And parishioners,
perfect analogy.
Yeah, and the people that go to church never feel, I guess, entitled to actually judge what's being said, because it's the gospel, according to you know, whoever's standing up front.
According to who, you know, and
yeah, exactly.
Says, do not listen to another gospel, you know, because that's the road to hell, you know, is listening to a false gospel. But anyway, mm-hmm. So let's talk about our own spiritual growth. So who is mm-hmm. responsible for that? Is it the pastor? Is it ourselves? What is it? It's both. And because scripture tells us to study to show yourself approved. It didn't say let somebody else approve you. It says study to show yourself approved before who? Before God. He's the one with the final say in everything. So who do you really have to prove yourself to? Man? No. God? Yes. Take what I have to say, you know, as gospel. Look to the scriptures and see what it says. Jeremiah 3:15 says, and I will give you shepherds after my own heart who will feed you with knowledge and understanding. If your pastor does not have a heart for God
mm-hmm.
and he is not looking after the welfare and the best interest of the flock that God has entrusted to him, you need to find a different church.
Yeah.
You need to find a different pastor. Go to a home group. But you've got to compare what he is teaching you with the Word of God, because then you will know if he has the heart of God or not. So,
yeah, I wonder if people think about that, whether they have a checklist to actually, you know, review the teachings and say, well, that was interesting, and that was wrong, and, you know, and it's almost like a mental checklist you can go through and sort of, you know, compare against Scripture. But if you're that good at comparing against Scripture, why do you need the pastor?
Because you're not necessarily needing the pastor. You are needing the corporate fellowship, getting to know your brothers and sisters, because it's not just about whether you have a need or not. It's does somebody in the congregation have a need? Because as Christians, it is incumbent upon us to reach out to that brother or sister and say, what do you need? How can I help you?
That makes sense.
It's not just, God bless you, be warm and be fed, but I'm not going to give you a coat and I'm not going to give you any food. You know?
Yeah, that's true. That's
not cool, right?
Not very
so
Christian.
We have a responsibility to our brothers and sisters to help them in a time of need. So, and if they have fallen into error according to Scripture, not because you don't like it, but because if it's something against Scripture that's going to harm them if they keep going in this, we have responsibility to go to them and say, hey, you know, what are you doing? So it's just accountability to the brothers and sisters in Christ. So Hebrews 13:17 says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account, as in an account for how they have shepherded you. So let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. This is talking about leaders who are doing it correctly. This is not saying submit to any authority over you. It does not mean obey every leader who says that they are a leader or the government says is a leader. No. You only obey and submit yourself to those who are in proper submission to the Lord themselves.
Hmm.
So
that makes
a lot
of sense.
In the church to say that.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about stuff I covered earlier in the show, talking about how we're being run by an idiocracy, how all the experts are always wrong, but they're telling you they're always right. You know, the finance people that said there was no inflation, the medical people that said that the only way to cure COVID is a vaccine. You take a look at any expert, the military people that say, well, we need to be at war in Ukraine, you know, for peace and stability. You know, the energy people that said that, you know, if we just switch everything to wind and solar, all our problems will be solved. They're all idiots. And we can judge those. But when it comes to church, there's kind of a difference that people sort of submit themselves to a church because that comes from God, or so they think. You know, the church, but the idea of people judging the church as to how close it is to God is, I think, a very new concept for a lot of people.
It is. And just the fact that you can question leadership mm-hmm. is a whole new concept, because that's not taught. But Acts 17.
We do. That's all we do is question leadership. You know, yeah.
Well, it says, you know, you're supposed to check the truth of what you've been told, right? So Acts 17:11 mm-hmm. says, now the Berean Jews were of more noble character than those in Thessalonica, for they received the message with great eagerness and examined the scriptures every day to see if what Paul said was true. Are you kidding me? Somebody was going to judge Paul? Only one of the greatest, you know, greatest disciples of Christ ever. But yes, mm-hmm. even Paul, they said, we know your reputation. We know, you know, all the things you've done. But you know what? You're standing here before us, and we are going to go ahead and set, look at the scriptures and measure everything you say against it. They wouldn't even accept what Paul said as gospel.
Wow.
So, you know, that's awesome. So if somebody goes into a congregation like that, they better be bringing the word of God. They better have known that they heard it from God and that what they're preaching is gospel truth, because otherwise they're going to say, sorry, but we, you know, do not accept your teaching, and then we brand you a false prophet. So
let
that word get out, you know. So if all of our politicians were judged by this standard, by the standard of the Constitution and the scripture itself, and saying, are you doing what is best for the flock, as in the entire nation? Are you doing what's best for them, or are you just up there gaining the wealth for you and screwing the entire nation?
You know, that's actually
if
in the Constitution.
If we held them to this kind of accountability, none of this crap would be happening right now.
Yeah, and that's actually in the Constitution. That these folks, that they have to promote, it says promote the general welfare, basically pass laws that are equally applicable to everybody, not just special privilege. And so we do have that in the Constitution to judge, you know, the leaders that are actually promoting the general welfare. In other words, laws that are generally applied to everybody, not welfare laws. That's a whole different thing. That's a misinterpretation. But laws are supposed to be passed that benefit everybody equally. The Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment says the same thing. So we can use the Constitution. In fact, we do this here all the time. Use the Constitution as the standard to which the politicians, you know, government of men and women, as opposed to a government of laws and constitutions. I mean, that's what defines a republic. You know, is that we are a constitution. We are a constitutional
office,
government.
To uphold the Constitution.
Say that again.
I said when they took office, they swore to uphold the Constitution. So why would they not be willing to be judged by it?
Well, it's interesting that if you don't value oaths, then you probably don't value God. You know, because I mean, if you're swearing an oath, I mean that's a sacred thing, and it's very similar.
Yes, it is.
Like I say, you know, your knowledge of Scripture. You know, and I talk about things that I know from the Constitution. They're so similar. I never really realized that before, how similar, you know, the oath to the Constitution and to laws and to a republic. A republic is actually probably the most sanctioned government style from God. I mean, we haven't really talked about that. But when you look at it, a republic has more virtues, certainly than a democracy, which is ruled by the mob, and all the leftists. You know, the socialist, fascist, Nazi, communist governments, which have no virtue whatsoever, and try and get rid of God as much as possible. But you look at a republic, you know, seems to me the closest to a government that God would approve of or would be in Scripture that's probably ever existed, unless there's something in the past that I don't know about. How's that?
Our founding fathers, any of them.
Well, I want to get Bianca too. I knew he was going to comment. Let's just go Wendy first. Back to the founding fathers. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead and take Pianchi's comment.
Okay, Pianchi.
Well, you're right, because if they don't obey and respect commandments on a spiritual level, they won't on a public level as it applies with the Constitution. I said, suffer little children,
true.
Come unto me. But when you have these school boards that's permitting sexual explicit vile material to be exposed to children, that's destroying the innocence. There's nothing more precious than the innocence of a child. You can't tell me something that's more precious. But you look at the attacks, the demonic attacks that's going on with our children. You're destroying their minds. You're trying to shape them into something that they otherwise would not be. And that's going against nature itself. It's going against God himself.
You're right, Pianchi. As a matter of fact, have y'all seen that video that just surfaced of Barack Obama talking about, I guess it was some kind of private thing. I'm not sure what group he was talking to. It didn't say, but he was saying, first, you have to confuse the people. Get them confused and get them to question everything until they finally say, I don't know what to believe anymore. He says, once you get them to that point, then you've won.
Sounds like
look what they're doing to babies. You know what's so precious about a baby? I mean, I don't know if you've ever considered it.
Everything. Nothing better than
but let me tell you what's very very precious about a baby, and it shows up in a particular culture in my family. A baby has just came from where the grandparent is about ready to go back to.
That's exactly right.
And that baby is carrying a message that those where he just came from is trying to deliver to the world. But if you kill him, you never get that message.
And you're right. Because babies all come from, and I'm telling you, that God knows them in heaven before they ever arrive here in human form. Their little spirits are well known in heaven. And you cannot kill a baby in the womb here without heaven knowing, without heaven saying that that was wrong because I put things in that child to bring to the earth and you aborted it.
That means you don't want to receive the good news or the instructions that would change your demonic way of living.
That's true. We have aborted many preachers, many doctors, many, many children who would have brought wonderful things to this world.
It would be interesting
to try and
speculate. What would our country look like if Roe v. Wade were never, you know, and I was listening to something on the news this morning. They said when the court legalized Roe v. Wade, legalized abortion nationwide, the court had no authority to do that, and yet no one's ever challenged it.
No, they did not.
You know, and it's something else that strikes me as interesting is that people say, well, you can't judge. What do you mean I can't judge? I judge all the time. You can't be human and not judge. You can't, you know, you can't accept a political party or structure without judging it, especially against scripture of what would, you know, what did God intend for us in terms of our freedom? And I think people understand, this is why I talk about this a lot on the show, is that God intended us, as you say, to be free. And this is to open my eyes up a lot, that there is virtue in freedom. There is God in freedom. And if you have a government that takes that away, the only way that government can first take it away is to get rid of God. You know, and then have people convince themselves that an abortion is okay, when obviously you're taking a life. It's basically a medical holocaust. You know, and so all these things are happening to twist people around. Yeah, go ahead.
Because now California just passed a bill in the House saying it's okay to kill a child for absolutely any reason up to 28 days after birth.
That's insane.
That's demonic.
Yeah.
And if nobody stands up against that, then it'll go to 2 years old.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you about California.
There's got to be somebody standing up and saying, no, you will not do this. This is wrong, and you will not do this. But because the world has shoved, you can't judge that because everything's relative. What's right to you is not right to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Bull crap. I am calling BS on that all over the place.
Yeah.
There is right and there is wrong and there are absolutes. And nobody wants to stand up and say that.
We do. Well, the absence of judgment actually is a sin. Is there something in that in Scripture that the absence of judgment is a sin in itself?
Because you are allowing evil to happen.
Okay.
You know, Wendy, California is turning into a modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah. And those that are still left there are going to wake up one morning, and that land is going to be broken off and floating out to sea.
Actually, no, it won't. The fault's too close to the ocean. It's actually right on the coastline. So the liberals will be floating out to sea. And because they're on the coast. Liberals on the coast, and conservatives are inland. Here's the weird thing about this that people don't understand. I used to teach this when I was in California as a tour guide. The North American plate is not pulling away from the Pacific. The Pacific plate is actually crashing into the North American plate. The San Andreas Fault is the division between the North American plate, which is heading south, and the Pacific plate, which is heading north. That's why the coastal mountains are there. The Pacific Ocean is actually crashing into Western United States. It's not pulling away from it. Here's one for you, Wendy. Totally change the subject. Planetary drifts, the plates that are on the Earth, How does that fit into the overall? We can do that. This would be another show. Tectonic movement, the plates of the earth, the natural forces, the fact that oil is created underground, you know, all these different things that are happening. A little off topic.
That sounds like that sounds like that is like way above my pay grade. But you know.
Okay. Well, just you know, as we drift, we can drift into continental drift. Go ahead.
I will join King Uzziah in Proverbs 30 that says I do not bother with things that are too high for me. But you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's funny.
I'm in my lane, bro. But
well, so you got to remember, I ask impossible questions. Now, here's one of life's little ironies. Lindsay Horton, who is substituting for Chancey Terry today, the very first thing she heard on this show was me talking about God and continental drift and how they're related. How's that for an intro to Action Radio? She's probably laughing right now.
Well, welcome to the wonderful chaos that is Action Radio.
Let me make her line right now just for a first impression, because I know you have to go, Wendy, in a couple minutes. But Lindsay, yeah. how's that for an intro to Action Radio?
Right. Good morning.
Good morning, Lindsay.
I was a little concerned when Chancey asked me to step in for, because I looked at all the titles of your shows, and then I listened to this one, and I was like, well, maybe I am going to fit
in. Oh, you're going to fit just fine.
I'm excited.
That's great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for stepping up for Chancey today. I'll let you guys get on to your segment, but thank you for letting me share today, and I bless everybody in the name of Jesus.
Do you have any contact information, anything you want to announce, anything happening?
Not at the moment. I mean, if y'all need to get in touch with me, go to Dimensions Ministries on Facebook, or you can go to Wendy Arthur on Facebook and just hit me up.
Sounds good. Thanks, Wendy. We'll do it again next week with more impossible questions for you and God.
See you later, Wendy. And also remember the old phrase, to move heaven and earth.
Amen.
Which brings us back to Continental Drift, but that's for another show. All right, Lindsay, Chancey, actually, I made a theme for her. So Wendy has a theme, Chancey has a theme. I got to make a theme for Pianki too, but here's Chancey's theme. This is how we get started with Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday.
Yes, that describes her perfectly.
Hold on. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. And our wonderful substitute today, Lindsay Horton. Let's give her a round of applause. See all the fun we have here?
I'm sorry?
I said, see all the fun we have here?
Oh, yes. I've really enjoyed listening this morning. You all are amazing.
Oh, thank you. Wait, did you get the show from my extended monologue in the first hour, or did you just pick it up with Wendy at the top of this hour? I'm just curious.
At top of this hour. I was doing a little bit of research this morning trying to stay on top of my game for you.
Yeah, I do that too. It's amazing how much I accomplished in the last half hour before the show. So what am I going to talk about?
Isn't
it? Take a look. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and actually, I mean, I have a plan overall, but, you know, I always get inspired by something on the news or some kind of new topic that intrigues me. So I'm going to let you go. Whatever you want to talk about is fine. And then I'll ask you impossible questions just like I do everybody.
Okay. Do you mind if I just kind of start by introducing myself and saying a little bit about what I do?
That's a really good idea. As soon as you said that, I thought, okay. we should really start there. Because this is what happens when I talk to people off air. It's like I kind of know a bit about their story, but go ahead. So introduce yourself and why you spell your name the way you do, Lindsay.
So the reason my name is spelled Lynnsey is because my mom wanted to name me Lenny after her best friend, and uh-huh. my dad my dad just didn't think that was a very feminine name, and I was his little baby girl. So when I came out, they decided to go with Lindsay, spelled the same, but just add an S to it. So I don't know. That's what I've always been told. I like it. It's unique. It's caused me a lot of, it's okay, I get it. Nobody spells it right the first time, so I'm used to it.
Yeah,
but
well, we have Cindy. We have Cindy Cagle, who is like C-I-N-D-I-E. So you're in good company.
Yes, exactly. But overall, I work in Gulf Breeze. I work with Chansey at Gulf Breeze Energetics. We're basically all our own entities, but we do a lot of work together to help our clients get a full circle healing when they come to us. I'm 33, and I refer to myself as what is a spiritual advisor. And basically, I am the person in the office that after they receive their, they go and see the physician, the actual doctors like Dr. Thorpe, then they go see Brian, who does a lot of the, I call him our physician, our athletic physician. He helps them get in shape. He uses a lot of our modalities within the office. Then Chansey does the massages. When people go through this type of non-traditional healing and they do it so intensely, what they find is a lot of times trauma will start to appear. It'll start to surface. And when you're going through an intense healing, the one thing that you have to do is you have to face what you've been through. If you don't, then you will reach a plateau and it'll become stagnant. So my job is to sit down and I work on the souls of the clients that come to Gulf Breeze Energetics. A lot of them are very ill, and I don't even like saying that out loud. I like to tell them to say that we are healing from a very severe illness. But essentially what happens is we bring up a lot of things, and what I find is that where these people harbor these hardships that they've went through is directly related to their health. So what I go into is their vibe. I ask them, what is your daily routine? What kind of music do you listen to? What kind of words do you speak? How do you feel about yourself? What's your faith like? And I basically take the current walk that they're taking in life and I realign them with their faith. Because when it comes down to it, in the end of our days, everybody is going to go and find their faith. Your faith is as alive in you as much energy as you'll put into it. So I listen to them, listen to the trauma, what they're going through, and we help them neutralize the pain that it's caused and try to find a new perspective on it. I refer to Job in the Bible a lot with my clients. So, we assemble healing, Reiki, all sorts of things.
This is fascinating. This is why I want to let you go and explain the whole thing. Your line is getting a little fuzzy at times. We're getting home, we're getting enough of it. It's okay, but I don't know if we can make it stronger. I'm hoping everybody who gets on the show will get a microphone so I can connect you directly in. But that's a different story. So when you talk about this is so full circle healing, let's start there. I believe that was the correct term. So people, it's not just one thing. You're working with everything. You know, the spiritual, the physical, the mental, the emotional, the chemical, the nutrition, the massage, you know, everything. So this is a total healing program, then, which means I need to have all of you on. Yeah. You know that, don't you? How did you get involved in the spiritual part of it? And how much of a part does that play in people's lives?
So the way that I got involved with the spiritual part of it is at a young age, I went through some very severe trauma, and it was emotional trauma and not physical trauma. And I come from a very small town where there's not a lot of spiritual knowledge. There's churches and pastors, of course, but it's really traditional. You know, if somebody's going through a hard time, we put them on an antidepressant or an anxiety medication.
I was going to get
something
to that.
Yeah,
I want to talk about that a lot. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. It's a quick fix. It's a Band-Aid. And as I was a child going through that, before they put it on me, I had a giant imagination. I would have very active dreams. I was really just a very happy child. I was always singing, dancing. I noticed that every time I got put on this medication that I just would become numb. I would just want to lay down and sleep. I didn't have any go in me. And when I became an adult, it really started to make me realize some things. One of them was I love dance. I love sitting around.
Your line's getting a little weak again.
I
don't know which. Yeah, check your signal.
Oh.
We're losing some of the words now. Maybe move to a different place or something. It's not quite as strong as it needs to be. And this is important. Yeah, that's better.
I'm sorry. I live in a middle, so sometimes my signal goes off.
Well, but, you check the bars as you're talking, so whatever is going to be the strongest signal, that's going to help it, because this is really important.
So what I found was that one day I was walking up to
Search. Oh, you're breaking up again. Lindsay, you got to move somewhere else or do something. Yeah, so just keep working on it. When you get the right spot, I'll tell you to freeze. And then
can you hear me really well now?
That's better. Yeah, let's just, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
So I noticed, can you hear me? I don't want to go into it without it.
No, you're fine. This is good right now. Yeah.
Okay. So I noticed I was trying to go up to my office and I just wanted to dance again. And I literally was so physically and emotionally exhausted that I couldn't do it. And nothing was going on in my life except for that medication. So I get off of it. And as soon as I get off of it, I started being drawn towards writing and recipes and just a lot of deep thought. And that all kind of started to wake me up because I was going to church and I was praying and doing all the things and nothing was really working. And I was like, so what is it here? Why do I want to write? Why do I want to explore my inner feelings, my inner thoughts? Like, why do I want to do all these things that a child wants to do? That's when I realized what your inner child is. And then I realized that I had a lot of childhood trauma that I hadn't healed yet. So I started getting off my medication and just giving in to that inner child. And that inner child helped me to find God again. It helped me find my faith. It helped me find hope. It helped me find something to be excited about in life. And as I grew with just allowing myself to experience things that felt good without that medication holding me down, everything started getting better. My purpose started becoming more clear. The people I attracted in my life were more positive. Even the hardships in my life made more sense. So a couple years into that new mindset, I had this very radical moment with God. And a lot of people go through that. If you talk to somebody, you know, if they've been through it, you can tell by the way they speak about it. They get super emotional in that moment. And you can really tell that they had a moment. So I was radically, radically rocked by God. And basically, I never had anything to do with charity or philanthropy or anything like that. And all of a sudden, now the only thing I wanted to do was go out and talk to people and let them tell me about what they've been through. And as I started doing that, I mean, I talked to everybody. If you were a stranger, you were my friend by the time I got past you. And I noticed that everybody went through hardships. Some people treated it with medication. Some people treated it with all of it. And I realized that none of it was positive. I was like, all these people are dealing with these horrible things in their life in these destructive ways. So I started learning about frequencies. And I noticed that the reason that these people were so angry all the time was because of what they were listening to, who they were talking to, what they were surrounding themselves with. And I decided that I was just going to try a change. So I started with singing bowls. And I learned what they do. They raise your frequency. They recalibrate you. They raise you up, and then when you settle, even if you were at the lowest state in your life, you're going to be a couple levels above where you were before you did it. That led me into meeting my mentor, Paige. She attuned me into Reiki, taught me more about frequencies, sound therapy. She introduced me to Chansey, and we've all just done the research, dug in, connected with Dr. Thorpe and the Aether research that he does, and I use every tool in my toolbox to help people revitalize their vibe.
Wow. You should join us again tomorrow for the World's Greatest Doctor Panel if you can. It's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Dr. Thorpe's on. He's a regular. So we have Dr. Thorpe.
Dr. Thorpe. He was my doctor.
Okay. Well, obviously we keep our doctor client, stuff going, but as far as helping other people, you should join us. We don't have a full panel tomorrow, so that'd be a good time if you have any time between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. I think Dr. Mikovits is off tomorrow. And so we'll have Dr. Thorpe, Dr. Ben Marble, Dr. Brian Artis, and a couple more surprises. And so it should be a really interesting show. But this would be good to talk about because I want to get away from the problems. So we've really documented the problems in the first three shows. So we've got 9 hours of problems. Now I start getting solutions. Now my solutions are legislative. So it's almost like my therapy, you know, because you and I have a lot in common. I mean, I had a very traumatized childhood, but there's no physical abuse. I mean, I had, you know, there was food, there was money, there was housing, you know, I didn't want for anything physically, but emotionally there was nothing. You know, I came from a highly narcissistic, very dangerous, very pathologically mentally abusive family that dragged me to three different countries growing up. So I was never stable. I was never what we call safe. I never felt comfortable and I never trusted any adult. That was my experience growing up. Okay. Now, do I still live that way? No, because, you know, I've changed. But what that kind of traumatic childhood did was it gave me the courage to do anything I want at this point in life. And so it's trauma has gives you courage. I think you probably, you know, you have a similar feeling. But what you do is what I do is make my inner child my permanent child. You know, I don't believe that an inner child stays a child. There's nothing wrong with that because the beliefs that you had at five, you know, I look back to when I was 5 years old and I wanted to be an airline pilot and the world was great and I was full of optimism and adventure. And you and I probably have a similar imagination. Nothing's out of bounds. You know, both good and bad things we think of, but our dreams are outrageous. You know, so when you have that active a mind, as I say, this show is powered by God and ADHD. You know, you're probably medicated for ADHD because you're younger than I am. So I didn't have that because they didn't even have the term ADHD, thank God, you know, when I was a kid. Otherwise, I guarantee you I would have been the most medicated kid in school. I was as hyperactive as it gets. I was always asking questions, always bugging the teachers, always asking things they could never answer. I can't tell you how many times I got thrown out of class because the teachers couldn't deal with me, not because I was disruptive, but because I was inquisitive. And I wanted to know.
You're curious.
You know, and yet what's an education for? To know stuff. So what do? They take out the one kid that asks all the questions, and they throw me out of class. Okay. So now I'm thinking to myself, what the hell am I doing in the hallway of a really good Australian private school, and you know, in various other schools, you know, in the United States and in Canada? Well, it wasn't so bad in Canada. I hadn't really developed this as much. But the point is that I realized that the world is one big hypocrisy, and that everything you're told is wrong. And then when they say, you know, live your dreams, but don't, because you make other people jealous, and no one wants you to be successful because they're not. And this whole idea of this medical industry. Of antidepressants and band-aids and permanent, you know, the zombie apocalypse is the antidepressant industry of all these drugs. And you said something really interesting. And this is what I want to get to after my little spiel here. Where is it? You're talking about facing the trauma that somehow therapy brings out traumas. So what I'm curious about is how are people suppressing their traumas and how is that destroying their lives? And then how do you deal with that? And how do these things come out?
So I think that every hardship carries a frequency to it. Just stick with me on the woo-woo part of this for a moment.
But no, you can woo-woo all you want. It's interesting to me. There's nothing's out of bounds
but
here.
I do.
So don't be bold. Don't be shy. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, and I think that it's fair to say up front before I go any further into that is a hardship's a hardship. Somebody's best, hardest day could be the easiest day I ever experienced in my life. So. You know, we judge on discernment. We don't judge on what's happening to somebody. We judge on how they're reacting. So anyway, I think that a hardship carries a frequency. And I think that it can, when that frequency comes into your overall 8th or 6th foot energy of your own that you give off, I think it can lower it. And I think that when you do that and you don't face what's happened and try to understand the lesson that you're trying to be taught in that situation, trying to find balance, harmony, understanding within what's going on with you, sometimes it's just so ugly you can't understand why that's happening to you. And that's when we hold it, we suppress it, and we put it down. Well, before you know it, I'll deal with it later. You know, a few days, there's a grievance. I'll deal with it in a few weeks, a few months. Well, the problem is while you're putting that off, other things are happening and you're already carrying that now lower vibration. So when all these other things are coming at you, you're just holding yourself down lower and you're burying that initial first thing. And now you have all these new things. It is like an onion. You have your surface level that you're dealing with today and yesterday and last week. And now we have to peel back month by month until we get down to that root foundation. So I think that's when it starts to manifest is when we start putting this off and it just gets so heavy. You know, if you get below, I think it's a 59 hertz with your actual physical frequency, that's when illness sets in, flu, cold, sleep depression, deprivation, stuff like that. So if you're listening to positive music, you're speaking positive words out loud,
you're being around positive situations, you're less likely to drop below that 59 hertz, and you can keep yourself in a higher state so that you can battle those hardships after you've gone through your grievance period. But if you don't know that, you're going to tell yourself, oh, I'm strong. I don't cry. I don't let my emotions out. I don't show anything, this, that, and the other. Society's made us believe, especially for the masculine, that that's how you're supposed to act, when in reality it's not. If you got good enough at dealing with your hardships, you could face them in the moment that they're happening and walk away with the release of understanding the lesson and not carrying that burden, that low vibration. You could turn it around. So I hope that kind of answered a little bit of what you asked.
No, it's interesting, and I can do that now, but it was a long process. I used to take everything as my fault, you know, even when it wasn't my fault, that my problems were my fault, that I was a bad person, you know, when in reality
the victim
as in a highly charged abusive situation. The other one, it became what they call parentification. I'm sort of giving all my personal stuff here, where I was, you know, I felt I was the only responsible person in my family at the age of 6, you know, and I had parents who were basket cases, and, you know, and it was a very strange situation. So a lot of times trauma can be over responsibility. And then you're in a situation where, you know, your whole life, the only approval you have is based on what you do for others. And that is very dangerous because then you become serving of others, and that completely destroys your relationships. And so what saved me actually at a young age, two things. One was playing music. I was really good at it. And two was flying airplanes. I was pretty good at that too. And so I had enough accomplishment in myself that I could challenge everything else and judge that against me. And something I wanted to bring up with Wendy is something out of the Bible too, or maybe it's Shakespeare, you know, to thine own self be true. And so you have to separate out the society and the things that are burdening you, and to be true to yourself. And if you can be true to yourself, you know, and I start with the inner child and work your way out from there and find out what's true for you, you know, without all the influences and the antidepressants and the people telling you, get rid of all those influences and say, what is for you? And if you do that, you can analyze your traumas and say, is this a trauma because I screwed up, or is it a trauma because the world is screwed up? I still have to deal with it, but it's not me personally. I don't have to hurt myself because of the world situation or some other person or some other company. How am I doing?
I think you're exactly right. A lot of my clients, when they sit with me, they have issues with needing validation and approval. They don't want anybody to be disappointed in them. And in reality, if the end of time comes and you're the last person on this planet, you're going to look at yourself and be like, did I do what I was supposed to do? Am I happy with what I did? Do I feel fulfilled? And you'll notice
what
that if you start.
That's a better
exactly.
What you're supposed to
and
do. That's my question.
If you're coveting, if you're looking at everybody else's life and you're coveting that life, I want that life. I wish to be like them, and I want that feeling. That's a sin in itself. So really, you should just see the beauty in what everybody else is accomplishing and hope that for yourself, and know that once you really give in to what you want to do, what you want to be, all of that success will come with it. But that goes back to faith. That goes back to confidence. That goes back to healing.
Yeah, I couldn't have done Action Radio if I didn't have a massive bout of depression and spent 2 years working on myself. And by doing
I can tell you're very well read.
Well, I did a lot of research because, you know, I don't get angry. I get creative and I get resourceful. And so I rejected all antidepressants. I rejected everything. I knew I was miserable. I mean, I describe it as walking neck deep in molasses. You can't move, you know, but because of that, that process freed me from ever being depressed again and completely cleared my life and cleared my path so that I could do Action Radio fearlessly, without reservation, without doubt, without fear, without worrying about risks. You know, driving across the country 4 months after open heart surgery was nothing. I just did it. Oh, yeah, there were problems because, you know, I gained 100 pounds after the surgery. But I just did it. The risk factor never entered into it to me. There was never a moment of questioning that I wasn't doing exactly the right thing, even when multitudes of people, they don't do it so much now because we're bigger and it's proving to be successful. But in the beginning, you're an idiot. That's a stupid idea. What are you talking about? You can't do that. Just watch, you know, and here we are.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you have to go through that process. You have to go into the depths. You have to go into the tunnel. You've got to see the light on the other side. And I think if you go through that process of almost like cleansing the traumas of your youth, getting back the kid that you used to be, having that optimism, combine that, the responsibility and the capability and resourcefulness of an adult, you can do anything.
Oh, yes, 100%. I mean, there are no restrictions on life after that.
Yeah. And I would like to add, too, that, you know, I went and got my bachelor's degree in psychology, and I wanted to get my PhD. And because of life, I had a child and all this, that, and the other, I needed a program that was similar to psychology but was available online. So I went into applied behavioral analysis for my master's program. And it was so ironic because the very first class, my teacher, psychology does not believe in us, and we do not believe in psychology. And when it came down to it, at the end of my journey with it, I found out that in reality, like, all they both are is conditioning. That's all both of those are. And that's not okay. You don't need a protocol or a checklist on how to make a client or a child act a certain way. You need to sit down and figure out how the world's going to work with how they act naturally. So about halfway through my master's program, I was in a group discussion. I was the only person not doing ABA actively in the field. And they gave us a student. It was a boy who kept disrupting class, raising his hands, this, that, and the other. And
That was me in my youth.
One of them actually stated that he needed to be made to sit on his hands. And another one said, well, he needs to go sit in the corner. And I'm sitting here like, okay, or why doesn't the teacher aide walk out in the hallway with him and be like, what's up? Are you having a rough day? Do you want to go on a walk around the hallway for a second? Because, then that child's no longer disrupting the class. His needs are being met, and the teacher still stays on her learning and lesson plan. So I just walked away from it. I just told myself, this isn't it. This is not how you treat a child. This isn't how you treat people in general. And I don't care what anybody wants to tell me. I'll create the way it should be done in my mind, and I'm going to show people. And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, you're welcome to Action Radio. I want you around for a long time. This is fascinating. I want to get to Bianchi because, and I'll tell you, well, I felt the same way when I was a flight instructor. I created an entirely new way to teach people how to fly, and I wrote a book on it. Bianchi's got it, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. So I want to talk about bucking the system. I basically told the FAA pretty much everything they were doing in teaching flying was wrong. Yeah, got a little criticism for that, too. Anyway, Bianchi,
yeah,
I know you want to get in the conversation.
Yeah, because we get it,
yeah.
And they don't
go
want
ahead.
Us to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you that story in a bit. Bianchi, we only got a few minutes left.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You see the failures in these government schools. Mm-hmm. And that has become a national security concern because you cannot have a functional, well-averse, and protected, and economically sound country if your citizens are not educated. And what's been going on thus far has not produced that. And you can see in the standings how the United States is getting to slip and even fall compared to the world.
Lindsay?
Yes, I agree. They spend so much time now trying to influence people to look and act a certain way that they're no longer providing the knowledge that these people need to live a fulfilling and satisfied life. Life is a lot more than your job title. That if that's the most important thing you can take away from this conversation is life is having the keys to live a happy and released and free-willed life. And that's what they should be teaching these kids, not how to deal with so-and-so looking this way, dealing with so-and-so acting that way. It's these are the tools you need to survive in life, and these are all the different ways that we can use them to suit you. And I think that instead they just want to oppress them and feed them antidepressants and tell them they're weird. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, weird. Yeah, I've heard that before, too. I want to talk just real quickly before we go. First of all, can you join us tomorrow? If you want to think about it, that's fine, too. But if you're able to, I'd like to have you join us on our discussion tomorrow with the world's greatest doctors.
Yes, okay, I can do that, and I'll find a place with really good reception.
Yeah, that helps too. That's one of those little technical things. The other thing is, you talked about vibrations, and I thought it was like more of a metaphorical term. But you're talking about actual vibrations. If you're measuring somebody's vibration at 59 hertz, you know that's I don't know where that stands on the scale, on the electromagnetic scale. You know, how does that compare to like AM radio stations? You know, where are you on the where are human beings vibrating on what part of the scale?
The radio stations, it's a different frequency that the radio stations are putting out. So that frequency is going to be more comparable to, say, a singing bowl or cymbals or a gong or something like that. You carry those sort of radio waves. And then we carry our own, like, you know, you turn on
you turn your life on, your soul on, and you're going to emit a frequency. So we're going to be at what's called a megahertz, and that's what we're measured on. You're going to be on what's called a hertz. There's a million hertz in one megahertz. So as you can imagine, that's why so much technology has been created. Right now, compared to 600 years ago, we are completely surrounded by low frequency through media, through the radio towers, through all of that. And it puts out negative messages too. So you can see to get to that 1 million hertz, to reach that megahertz, it's not as hard for the government as it used to be to keep us in that low vibration. But with your radio station, if you use it to speak like you do, you're educating people, letting them know, making them aware, then they have a chance to combat that. They can take away the positive message from your radio station. They can take away the useful information to put into their life. A lot of it has to do with intention too. So, yes, I actually have a scale right here that tells us what a healthy state of health is.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting because if I understand hertz, it's cycles per second. One hertz is like 1,000 cycles. I think a megahertz might be 1,000 hertz. I don't think it's a million, but I could be wrong.
Well,
I wrote down
a million, but it could be 1,000.
But the reason I'm asking is because if we're vibrating at the same level as different things, you know, there's the electromagnetic scale includes visible light, it includes radio waves, it includes all these different things, you know, from ultraviolet to infrared. And I think actually radio waves are above ultraviolet. So once you get out of the visible spectrum, and these are all things that are electromagnetic. So the reason this is so fascinating to me is it means that we are more connected to the physical environment than we thought. And so
100%.
But this is something I want to explore with you now. So here's our next show. Kim, what do you think of our next show? Right? So take notes, write down the podcast, you know, listen to it afterwards. But this is where I want to go with it. This is fascinating. And let's talk about the physics. And the reason I'm so interested is because I play rock and roll guitar. And so I've been playing for about 40 years. And what is so fascinating to me is there are certain frequencies, there are certain tones. There's a tone that I get on the guitar. It's the humbucking pickup. You know, I have a G&L guitar, but it's basically like your Gibson Les Paul. You know, has that thick, fat, you know, beautiful tone to it, and it vibrates, and I can feel it. And I think rock and roll is a study in itself. It's music that you actually feel. I mean, you listen to jazz, but you feel rock and roll. That's the difference.
Yeah.
I love both of them, but for different reasons. But
I have
this
a
is something...
piano in my office there for yeah,
there
the,
you go.
The ones. I have a piano in my office that I have for the kids who know how to use pianos, because the notes that they play emit the frequencies that give us a higher vibration, just like the guitar. I could sit and listen to somebody string a guitar for hours. It has such a beautiful effect, as long as you're playing it in the proper way. You know, as a musician, that you can play a higher vibration song or a lower vibration song, and you know that's going to affect the crowd watching you.
Yep.
True?
Oh, yeah.
So,
power chords, man. Power chords are where, you know, I mean, if I play Dire Straits,
too,
it's one vibration.
So.
You know, if I play Judas Priest, it's another vibration. It's quite interesting. I've got my guests for the next hour, so I want to get on to them. But what I want to do is invite you, first of all, tomorrow, and we'll talk off the air about getting you back more often, either with Chancy or your own report or something like that, because you're fascinating. And so thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you. That really means a lot to me, and I look forward to speaking with you in a little bit. Just shoot me a message. I'll be happy to speak with you, okay?
Okay. Well, we're going to chat tomorrow. The doctor panel gets crazy because we never know who's going to drop in.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, listen to last week's show, and you'll see. Before you go, do you have any contact information of you know, where you're working, things you're working on, websites, Facebook pages, things like that?
So you can just get a hold of me. My phone number is 850. I know it's public. I don't care. 850-266-4745. Just ask me any questions you want. You can find my nonprofit. It's the Testament Corporation on Facebook. I'm also on TikTok, but I know that we don't talk about TikTok on this channel. So it's just
well, I don't
name.
Talk about it because it goes directly to the Chinese Communist Party. It's a data collection system. So that's why I don't do it.
I completely know that they do that too. So please, I understand that they do that. But I do healing videos on there with my Reiki energy. So if anybody wants to check that out. But yes, I look forward to speaking with you in the morning. And thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Well, you're very welcome. And we'll do it again. Pianki, what do you think? Should we keep her? Thanks, Lindsay. Pianki, what do you think? Should we keep her around for a while?
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, kilohertz is 1,000, megahertz is millions per second.
Oh, okay.
You
know,
I'm old ham radio.
Yeah. Oh, see, there
so
you go. So the knowledge. Well, actually, Lindsay, if you want to stick around for the next hour, I forgot to. I should have mentioned that. You're welcome to stick around for the rest of the show if you want. So you can do that. Too.
I'm going to put you on mute. That way, I have my little one at home, so I will put you on mute if I hear something that I would like to. You know what? Actually, I think I'm just going to end it here. I've had a really good experience.
Okay, and check the podcast later. You can listen to yourself and take notes for all your future appearances.
Leave it on so the little one can hear it, and when you look over and see them laughing their head off, you know why.
Exactly.
We do have our moments here. All right, let me get to my new guests. We have two special women here I want to introduce. First of all, let's make Sarah's line live. Good morning, Sarah. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you.
Good, and we got Lacey. Let's make her line live too. Good morning, Lacey.
Good morning, guys.
All right. We do something, one of my big priorities here at Action Radio is family law. And the corruption, the disgust that I have for these courts, for these people, for all the guardians and social workers and psychologists, the entire family law corruption industry is so bad. And this is one of the worst examples I've ever heard, that they're now arresting people at gunpoint, taking kids. And it seems like almost part of their plan to take kids from the parent that can do the kids the most good to the one who's the most dangerous. And this goes for men and women. You've got, you know, mothers losing kids to abusive fathers. You've got fathers losing kids to abusive mothers. It seems to be their plan. They pick the worst person and give them the children in order to maintain conflict, to bring in money, to perpetuate this horrible system. That's why we spend a lot of time on it. That's why I started the Action Radio Family Law Project. That's why folks like Michael Volpe investigates this. We have other folks. We have Angel Law looks into this in California. And there's a lot of folks who are dealing with the situation. But we need legislation. So ultimately, that's where we're going to get to. But I want to get to a couple of stories. So I'm going to start with Sarah and then go to Lacey. So Sarah, tell the story. Take all the time you want. Introduce yourself. You know, like I say, you can reserve personal information, withhold names that you want to. But let's talk about what happened as brutally and bluntly as you want to. And let's see if we can start to deal with this issue. So, what happened?
Sure. Yeah. I was in a pretty long domestic abuse situation. When my children were born, things were okay. The abuse was more towards myself. I didn't receive a lot of help, a lot of, you know, care with regards to the children. I remember having a second C-section with my second child and being on the mattress on the floor in the bedroom with a three-year-old and a newborn and, you know, just really being told to shut that thing up, you know, in agonizing pain. But I have to say at the point where, you know, he started abusing the children, things really turned for me. I think I had for a long time what they call a trauma bond. So, you know, you engage
in
that blaming of yourself.
Okay. I've never heard that term.
I've done a lot of, sure, yeah. I guess a trauma bond is that desire with your abuser to kind of always, you're always walking on eggshells. You're always wanting them to approve of you. They sort of break you down, make you feel like you're nothing, that you're not capable of leaving them. And
that's
I have
narcissism.
To say it took
that's pathological
right, exactly.
Narcissism defined. Yeah. So you
yeah.
use those. I'm very familiar with those. Trust me. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, it really took a long time for me to leave the relationship,
mm-hmm.
You know, to feel like I had the support or resources. You know, it really came down to him hitting and beating and slapping my two young sons. At that point, you know, I had gone to the court and gotten a restraining order, all those things. And he really convinced me at one point that he was, you know, willing to change. He was willing to go to therapy, work on all these things. And I had come from a family, a divorced family, did not have a father growing up, you know, a stable father figure. And I thought I didn't want to deprive my children of that.
Right.
And, you know, obviously looking back, I recognize that was a huge mistake. This really all cultivated into the abuse and the escalation getting worse after I had asked him to leave. There was an incident with a loaded gun in our bedroom. On Mother's Day of 2018, I was beat, strangled, and asphyxiated almost to death in front of my two small children. And from there, things just spiraled and got worse. The narrative of my assault changed into, of course, you know, I was the abuser. I was coaching the children. I was lying.
Parental alienation, right? That's what they accuse you of, parental alienation?
Parental alienation, you know, coaching.
Right.
Yeah, that, you know, I was, you know, keeping the kids. And it was interesting because he really didn't want anything to do with the children, even after
he
separated.
No, he wants to control you. Yeah, you have kids so that you're bound to him.
Until he found another woman, interestingly, with some, she was a former, I want to say, escort for Mafia in Massachusetts.
Ooh,
and
this
she
is serious.
Now, yeah, so she was a 20-year-old woman that had a baby with a 60-year-old man that was on Massachusetts' top 10 most wanted list. So now she's currently raising my children with him. So I was not able to, you know, I was trying to get child protective services, the police, the courts. I think I went to every resource humanly possible. You know, I knocked on the doors of every local DV agency. I went to the military protection program. They told me they could not help me. I gave over 200 documents to NCIS.
Were you in the military? Were you in the military at the time or serving?
He is in the military.
And he is. Okay.
Yes, he is in the military. Okay. And he is also a government official, high ranking with a lot of ties. So,
security clearance?
And high, very high security clearance, very high.
Great.
Yep. And even though I provided NCIS with documents forging my name and my court docket number, he had been arrested for domestic violence assault. He wrote them a letter, signed my name and a court docket number to it. And, you know, they said, but wait a minute, you recanted your allegations. And I said, but I have an email. It's from him to me. It's not the other way around.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I had a situation where the lawyer I retained did not show up. My witnesses I had subpoenaed across state line did not show up. And I was denied, you know, all of these things in a courtroom while having to face the two people that had beat, strangled, and asphyxiated me on Mother's Day in front of a horrible, horrible misogynistic judge who really seems to hate women. And I lost. And that, of course, as you know, became the law of the case. And I was bound to principles of res judicata and collateral estoppel, essentially meaning this has been a finding and this is now fact.
Wow. This is, oh yeah, keep going. Yeah, feel free, keep going.
Yes. No, at that point, you know, he continued to beat my children. There were a number of incidences where I had DHHS showing up to my workplace, grabbing my child around the abdomen, trying to restrain him as he's trying to get away from his father. My son is crying, screaming, starting to wet the bed again. Please don't make me go back to that guy that hurts us, Mommy. And nobody would stop it. I was essentially told by my lawyer they are going to come and take the kids. He's filed an emergency order. I want you to be calm. I do not want you to fight them. I want you to stand still and let them take the children, you know, give them to their abuser. And there's nothing that you can do. You might see your kids in 6 months, a year, if you're lucky. And that was the situation that I was facing when I took my kids and attempted to get assistance from some domestic violence shelters. Unfortunately, I did not feel safe with our own government and how I'd been treated and how they had failed to protect the kids. And I went to a neighboring country to seek asylum and safety there in hopes that they would protect my kids because the U.S. government failed to protect mine.
You can mention that country if you want. Feel free.
Canada. Yes, it's Canada.
Yeah. This is amazing. I muted Lacey's line just for a bit because I think we're getting a little background noise on that line. So when you're not, either of you, whichever one's not talking, just mute your line on your phone there, and then just click it back on when you want to start talking again. And that way, if there is background noise, we're not going to get it. Sarah, the problem I have, first of all, is what happened to you. All of this is horribly wrong and a tragedy. But this isn't the first time I've heard this story. In fact, it always seems to follow a similar pattern. This is how I know that this is ingrained in the system. The abuser wins. And they're usually powerful. They usually have some kind of status. They have money. They have a family behind them. They have an incredibly corrupt judge. You have incredibly corrupt associates, you know, the other attorney, the social workers, psychologists, the guardians. And they all go to lunch together at the country club. This is very familiar.
The DHHS worker was literally rubbing his thigh in the middle of the courtroom and smiling and laughing. I mean,
say that again.
Yeah.
Well, I want everybody to hear that. Say that again.
During the court hearing, where my lawyer did not show up to protect me in that situation when I was trying to protect myself after being assaulted and strangled, the worker from DHHS was literally sitting next to him on the bench, groping and rubbing his inner thigh, smiling and laughing, and then handed me a finding of abuse that I was the abuser during my assault.
Yeah. This is how it gets turned around. And this is I think they're all, you know, in some ways either narcissist or you know, somehow there's some kind of mental incapacity with anybody in the family court system because they all seem to do this. They go out of their way to extend these cases, to make it as horrible as possible, to take kids. And the kids are screaming, I don't want to go with that person, whether it's the mother or the father, who they don't want to go with. I hear this the same situation, too, that some strange woman who you don't know is raising your kids. This is a very common story, too. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many of these I've heard. And it is such a consistent pattern. And this is something I've learned over the last maybe 2 or 3 years of doing family law episodes like this. It is such a consistent pattern. It should be able to be documented. It should be able to be made unlawful. I would get rid of the family courts. I would put these all in civil court with juries. You've got to start bringing juries in because juries of regular people will look at this in horror and say, of course you can't award the kid to that person, whoever that abuser is. What, are you nuts? No, that's wrong. Whereas the judges, they don't care.
Right.
Because they're all part of the system.
No, and then unfortunately they have immunity from Section 1983 laws. You know, they can do whatever they want, and there is no accountability. There really is no checks and balances for the judges to act in, you know, to behave accordingly, to make fair rulings, to make just rulings, to look at the law.
So what's Section 1983? Is that federal law, state law of where you are?
It's under federal law, U.S. federal law.
Do you know
law.
The title?
It's,
do you know the title?
If you type in Section 1983, it talks about being able to sue different people, you know, for, you know, various things. But one of the things is the lack of judicial responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, judges are immune from being sued for their rulings. And I think that needs to change. We were talking about
laws.
Well,
this is the place to do it.
Exactly.
This is the place to
so
do
I did
it. Yeah.
Submit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did submit on the Write Your Own Laws website to try to change that. I mean, that needs to be ratified. It needs to change.
When
I
did you do that? Because I haven't been on the site for a couple of days. Did you do that recently?
It was a few days ago.
Okay, so that's my mistake then. So what I need to do, in fact, sorry. So obviously you're coming back. I need the reader review it, take a look at it, see it, check it in law, and then let's get you back and see if we can start working on that.
Yeah.
Anything else we need to know? I'm going to get back to you, obviously, but I want to get to Lacey and get her started.
Yeah, no, the accumulation, I was working with a lawyer. You know, my goal wasn't to remove the father completely from the children's life, but you know, to make things safe for my kids so that they were not fearful. Unfortunately, I was not able to make that happen, you know. And, you know, in hopes of protecting my kids to stop the abuse, he had told the Canadian authorities or the police or the FBI, amongst people involved with my case. And by the way, just to give you a little background, I was a director of a school for children with autism and developmental disabilities at Integrated Preschool. I'm about 108 pounds, so maybe 110.
What's your education, too? If you're running that school, you probably have masters or doctorates or something? Or what's your degrees?
I have a master's degree and a master's of science in applied behavior analysis, ironically, your last guest. I'm more of an eclectic behavior analyst, but he had told them that I would be heavily armed, even though I've never owned a weapon in my life, that I would be violent and that they would need excessive force to take me down. None of those things were true. So I was woken up in the middle of the night by authorities screaming at me in French. I had a loaded gun to my head, and I had three other guns pointed at me while authorities screamed at me in French. My children were sleeping. I did not make a peep. I did not want my children to wake up and see what had become of mommy. Unfortunately, I did not get to say goodbye to my children, and to this day, I do not know if my children know that I'm even alive. I have not gotten a single photo, a call, an update of any kind, despite begging the courts. And they have literally left it that he has complete authority and control. It is written in my bail conditions that he has the ability to decide whether or not I have contact with my kids. And of course, I never have, despite multiple attempts in court. So I'm bound by a restraining order based on the fact that I have pending charges. So it's called a protection from abuse, even though there are no allegations I've abused my children. They're using the charges, which I have not been found guilty of, to prevent me from seeing my two boys. It's been 2.5 years now. Very, very painful.
How old are they now?
2.5 years.
Yeah. How old are they now?
My youngest just turned 7 this past month, and my oldest is 10.
Wow. This is insane. I'm going to let Pianki see if he wants to ask a question. Pianki's kind of like my de facto co-host here on the show. Why do you think it is that your abusive ex is this powerful and has this much control in the courts? What's going on here? Because this is completely unjust, obviously.
There's certainly he's very good at his job and very valuable in terms of national security. What he does is directly related to our subforce. And getting those submarines turned around quickly. And he's sort of in the top of his field in the military. He is, ironically, and this is not going to surprise you, he is a war games expert. And so he's always been 3 or 4 steps ahead of me, planning, executing, kind of knowing how to throw me under the bus, knowing what kind of things to put into statements, details. He's made me look like I'm unstable. I'm jealous. I was desperate to get him back, that I made up all of these allegations to get attention. I just need the spotlight on myself. It's typical gaslighting. Certainly the military has given him, credence to do these things. They've in denying the children and I assistance, They've allowed him to continue this narrative. I actually have a brilliant lawyer who, after dealing with these issues of collateral estoppel and res judicata, meaning the law has already found these things to be fact, we can't untrue them, right? Unfortunately, the things that have been found are not true, and they're based on, lies from him and his family members. I have
wealthy
filed
family?
The first
wealthy
that?
Family. Wealthy family.
No, it's not that they're wealthy.
They're
just
powerful.
Really crazy. He's got the power, and they've kind of fallen in as the flying monkeys, the Aunt Lydias of the world. In fact, his sister was actually the one that helped strangle and asphyxiate me on Mother's Day. She's a fitness trainer. at his command.
I don't want to identify these people yet publicly on the show, but if there are charges and trials and things like that, then absolutely we're going to do this.
Of course,
if they appear in family court and that's a public record, then feel free. So public records, we're gonna talk about people like the judge, if you want to name them, but the people that are not public, I want to keep them private until such time as we can make them public.
These people are on the public record, and I have a civil perjury action. So there's only one state in the country that allows a civil perjury action.
What's that?
And so we've bought, I'm sorry?
What is civil perjury action? I'm not familiar.
So in most states, the federal government or the district attorney can bring a criminal perjury charge. So for lying in court,
have
gone under oath. Yeah, they went under oath and lied about my assault and battery. Given that I had no witnesses, no lawyer, no evidence, I was denied all of those things. So they wrote their own story. And I have the first civil perjury action. They've been charged with civil perjury and conspiracy and conspiracy fraud. And you really touched the nail on the head. We found a way around this family court thing because in superior court, this type of case would require a jury trial and not a single. And that's the route my lawyer and I are currently taking. This is literally the first case of its kind in legal history in the United States.
Okay, so now I want your lawyer on. I want you guys together. So we're going to follow this case. This is fascinating. The only advice I can give, and obviously you know far more about the laws and the applicable things than I do, but from my experience with narcissists, which is long and extensive and will never happen again, they're predictable. They follow a pattern. So the more you can learn about narcissists, the more you can predict what they're going to do because they are very specific. That's how I was able to do a lot of things that I'm not going to talk about on the show. But the point is that you can use psychological warfare against them. So when they're in court and they say that you're crazy and all this kind of stuff, you say, well, of course they are. They're narcissists. Here's the pattern. Here's the documentation. This is what narcissists do. You know, so use it against them. Infuriate them. Aggravate. Make them angry. Make them as irrational as you can make them look and be as calm and cool as you can. And then you can say, well, see, they are crazy. They're saying I'm crazy? Well, that's projection. We know what that is. That's documented here.
And the irony is I was a, great, loving mother capable of running a business and doing all these wonderful things. But then all of a sudden, one day, I just was crazy. I mean, it doesn't add up. His narrative does not add up. And that is
you ran a school for kids.
I hope to expose.
you ran a school for kids. I mean, why would somebody do that who doesn't love kids? And the parents would, if you were cruel to those kids, the parents of those kids would immediately, you'd be all over the local news. so that's there's your evidence.
Well,
right
the irony is that the judge took my school while I was detained in Canada. Mm-hmm. They actually took my school. He has no background in childcare, and neither does the relative. And the two
they're
people
running the school?
Who abused myself and my children are now running my school.
Have you talked to the parents?
And that's part of the conspiracy charges.
Yeah. This is fascinating. All right.
It's terrifying.
Let's get a comment from Pianki, then we'll get to Lacey, who's saying, I'm on the show too.
Of course.
You know, I'm
listening.
Okay, good.
It's like
all right.
It's like looking into a mirror, hearing her story is so much like mine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's I want to hear all of it, too, so you're not going to get shortchanged here. Anything we miss, we'll just pick up another time. Pianki, you had a couple of comments or questions?
Well, I can't comment too much on the laws of Canada. But as far as this individual sounds like he has two personalities to me. And one personality has value with intelligence, United States intelligence and military. But he's got another personality that he's just a plain demon. And he's showing out that possessiveness that he's trying to have over this lady and taking it out on the kids, sort of like an animal, like a lion would do when he walks into a new pack. He kills the male cubs of the previous lion that he just ran away. So this is very, very disturbing to me.
Yeah. Sarah?
Yes.
Well, I'm just curious.
I'm here.
Like I said, but this is the pattern, though. And this is when Pianki talks about two personalities, that is definitely a quality of narcissists. I had parents that would praise me in public and tell me I was an idiot in private. you know, and a lot worse things.
Right. He,
you know,
he literally set the course. And, you know, when all these things that I was being beaten, raped, threatened, my kids were being beaten, abused. And he literally told me, if you do not take me back, if you do not let me move home, I am going to do these things to you. I mean, he set out exactly what he planned to do, how he and his sister were going to fabricate a story and take my home, take my life, make sure I lost my licensure. And, you know, he did all of these things. I mean, I have these texts, I have these recordings, I have these emails, I have all of this evidence.
Good.
You know, I had a binder over, you know, hundreds of documents I brought to DHHS that I had spent months accumulating for them to look at. And the, you know, director just flipped open the top and said, well, that's the past. And I said, no, it's not. This guy is an abuser. This is a pattern of behavior that has happened in the past, and it will repeat itself in the future. And all the things he accused me of are the things he's actually doing, alienating, abusing, coaching. You know, my kids went to therapy for 2 days and then were yanked. Supposedly they were traumatized by me. And, you know, the therapist said it was so strange that the kids never even mentioned their mother. I was their primary attachment figure for, you know, the first, you know, for one child, 7.5 years, the other 4.5, and then all of a sudden they just stopped talking about mommy. I mean, it's very strange.
No, it's called lies. Let's get to let's get to Lacey here, and I want to hear your and take your time, you know, and they'll get you both at the end. We'll chat a little bit, but Lacey, your turn.
Good morning. Okay,
Good morning.
My case starts. It starts with the first DV happening in 2013. My daughter was only a few months old. We share, my ex and I share a 9-year-old, which now I obviously have no custody and haven't spoken to since my arrest March 24th of 2021.
And what
so
were you arrested for?
What
did they say? What were the charges?
Child abduction.
Oh.
And
explain.
I've had my daughter. Yeah, so I've had my daughter since she was born. I actually drove myself to over an hour to have her in labor while he was, I don't know, doing something, I guess, that was more important, drugs possibly.
Wow.
But so in 2013, my daughter was only a few months old, and he knocked her out of my arms. I caught her before she hit the ground. He was charged with, he had abused me during this incident. He was, there was like, I guess, maybe 7 different felony charges he was actually arrested on. He actually fought the cops that day. He was also charged with child abuse during this arrest. When he went to court, he took a plea, of course. So he was only, I believe, the only two charges that stuck were the felony domestic violence. And I think he had like multiple guns. He was a felon with guns, and they obtained, I don't know how many guns from the home, many even being illegal in the state of California. Then he was slapped on the wrist. I believe he did 30 days in jail for this incident. And these are very public. Like, you can type in his name and you can see all of the charges he even had.
Yeah, well, criminal records are public. Yeah. You know, just to hold you up for a second, because this is interesting, because we have everybody seems to want these red flag laws. Well, we've got to take guns away from people that, you know, we think might be dangerous in the future, maybe. However, stalkers, abusive exes, people in family court disputes, your abusers are the very people who are going to report you to as abusive. And if you have, as dangerous. And that way
stalkers.
They can be predators upon you, and this happens all the time, that the people that are the predators are the ones who accuse their you know, victims of being dangerous, and once the guns are removed, it's open season. I mean, it's horrible what happens. Go ahead.
He actually has stalking charges in Oregon as well from his previous relationship. His ex-wife has nothing to do with this case, and she won't even make a statement because she fears for her life. And, you know, now this individual has custody of our daughter, and there's a grown woman in fear of her life for even making a statement. So then that was in 2013. So 2015, another felony domestic violence assault on me occurs. He has our daughter in his arms at this point.
Again, he got a slap on the wrist. He only did 6 months for his second felony domestic violence charge. There was multiple allegations from the children from 2013 all the way through 19 of different types of abuse. CPS was involved multiple times. A lot of third parties are the ones reporting these things. Mm-hmm. He woke up the boys. I have two boys that are not his, that are older from previous marriage, which I still have full custody of, mind you, and have never lost any custody of them throughout the history of any of this. Mm-hmm. He woke them up in the middle of the night and ambushed them with airsoft guns, and then gave my youngest son a gun, an airsoft gun, to chase after his brother, told him that there were some bad guys in the bathroom where my son, oldest son, was hiding, and then flipped on the light, opened the door, you know, and had him shoot his own brother, which CPS did nothing again.
Airsoft, what kind of projectiles do those throw, just so people know what we're talking about here?
Hard little BBs. They're airsoft BBs.
So it's an air rifle. We're not talking about Nerf balls or foamy,
right,
spongy things. We're talking about dangerous, eye-putting out, potentially fatal.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when CPS investigated this, they said that, you know, he was simply playing airsoft with them. I'm like, who wakes up and ambushes children after they've been sleeping for hours and they have no protective gear in the home, and you're telling me this is normal? Okay, not at all.
Wait, are these same people that want to take guns out of homes, the same people that say that you can't protect yourself? That it's like, it's okay if it's the abuser doing it. It's like, it's okay if the criminal has the gun, but
absolutely,
if the honest person does, then we have to take those away. This is we're in such a warped world right now.
It is very. They have an agenda.
Yeah.
Like just the same thing, like they're now allowing people to steal, so much, like I think it's under $1,000 and they can't chase you out of the store or convict you on theft. They're normalizing all of this stuff, but yet at the same time, it's like cherry picking on who they're actually going to charge with things.
Yeah.
It's quite
California's like the bellwether of insanity. You know, what goes there seems to find its way to the other Marxist states. And fortunately, I'm in Florida. I was in the Bay Area for 30 years, so I know California. But I'm really glad to be here in Florida now.
So 2019, it was the first time that I witnessed the abuse actually transform from me to my child in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I stopped him. I actually stopped him. Mind you, he's 6 foot, 250 pounds. I'm 5'5" and a half, and I was like about 140 maybe at the time. And so I stopped the abuse from occurring, and I was actually arrested, and they tried to charge me with domestic violence, which I beat that case because it was pure junk.
Yeah.
Obviously, and for like a year, and they tried to make me take some kind of charge. They even dwindled it down to wanting me to take a disturbing the peace charge. I'm like, what? No, I'm not taking any charge. I was protecting my child, and how can you not see this? So again, CPS is involved for many, many years, not doing anything. There was allegations of him showing genitalia, things of that nature from my boys, and CPS disregarded any of this and downgraded it to locker room behavior.
Wait, what's going on with CPS? They're originally charged
with their job is to
protect kids. What's going on here?
Well, yeah, that's what they say, but we know that's not what they do. So CPS and family law court, garbage. You know, family law court is a multi-billion-dollar industry. It is a money-making industry. It is not in the best interest of any child. It is purely just a money-making industry in my mind, and CPS is right along with them. They are not.
We've talked about that.
Yeah,
we need to. There's a lot of places that need reform. What we really need is some major public figures. And I'm talking major public figures to start taking an interest in this. Get it into the national debate. Write the bills that need to be written and have it come up for the election. That's actually contingent on people getting in to office. They're going to deal with family law. Because it's ignored. No one cares. It's not up there with guns and inflation. Go ahead.
Right. Nobody wants to interfere with a multi-billion-dollar money-making industry, because if they do change family court, then these people that are making money off of this industry are going to come after them. Nobody wants to dissolve this revenue.
Well,
and then
you know us here. That's not going to stop us.
You know, we do, but you know, the people that matter that have the power to change it don't want to infringe on it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, in 2019, as I got arrested for domestic violence, upon my release, I packed up, moved out with nothing but my children, my car, and a bag of clothes. And as we were away from him, the children began to disclose sexual abuse allegations.
Yeah.
And our own daughter had actually, you know, started telling me some very detailed, horrific things that went along with things that she was having occur at the times that she said this stuff began to happen. Like, she had anal seizures, and she was claiming that, you know, he was putting things in her anus. And she had constant yeast infections and things of that nature that started around the time that she says this abuse occurred. So I have a lot of evidence that backs up what my daughter states, and my boy is, for that matter, and no one looks at it. No one wants to look at this evidence, and I've produced this evidence during my family law hearings over and over again, and I did not have representation. I went to the family law, like, library and followed through with everything that they had instructed me to do, and time again, they just took every shred of evidence I had and tossed it out. And he had no evidence
grounds?
Against me.
Did they give you an excuse, or they just tossed
me?
What'd they say when they tossed your evidence?
They didn't say anything. At one point, they didn't even have a court reporter in the courtroom. They were not following any laws and were doing what they wanted to. And I couldn't wrap my head around why the court was doing this, why they were not following law, you know. So I had contacted a bunch of different agencies, mostly domestic violence organizations and things of that nature. I found out that there was a previous employee through the Family Court Services by the name of Emily Gallup. She was a whistleblower that blew the whistle on this Nevada County, California is where my case is. She blew the whistle back in 2013, and she was actually speaking out on what was happening in family court there. She was terminated. She filed a wrongful termination suit against them, won a bunch of money. They sued her back, and she has not been speaking out on any of this since they retaliated against her. There are numerous, I think there's like 3 different YouTube videos that include her interview speaking out on what has happened and what was going on, why she was working in Nevada County and Family Court Services, and it's exactly what has happened in my case. So she also speaks out on how there you can blow the whistle on these courts, but there are no repercussions for them. There's nobody to police the courts. Therefore, they continue to do what they're doing, and I believe this has a lot to do with power, you know. So the judge that was involved in the beginning of my case had threatened me that he would take my daughter away and give her to her father the more that I basically, in his words, bucked the system because I didn't agree with the plan that they had in action, which was introducing her to unsupervised time with him. My daughter, in the beginning of our case, spoke out to Sergeant Bates of Grass Valley PD, which there's a police report stating that she told him that her dad chases her around with his pants down and things of that nature, and he does bad things to her. And this was early 2019. They forced her to go to a supervised visitation facility through the family courts. The first facility that we went to, she hid under the table, acted like a dog, wore sunglasses, hat, did not want to see her father at all. The court took her voice away and didn't allow that to happen, told her she had to see her father, therefore changed the venue to a place called Helping Hands. Helping Hands, I found out, began to commit perjury. I have 100% proof of this. They actually asked the court for unsupervised time very early on with the supervised visits. they were allowing him to be unsupervised with her in the supervised visitation facility. And she
Why isn't he arrested in jail? Where's the criminal prosecutions of this kind of stuff? I mean, this is obviously a crime.
Exactly.
Where are the police? Where is the law enforcement? Where is the district attorney?
The police
where is the,
are involved in this.
How are they involved? How are they involved?
And I have 100% proof of this, too.
I believe you.
And this will soon come out when I go to trial, okay. Which is very, very soon. I have my arraignment on July 1st.
Is this a criminal trial for you or a civil trial? What kind of trial are we talking about?
It is a criminal trial. Like I said, I was arrested by the U.S. Marshals. I, at gunpoint, I actually had shotguns
Wait. U.S. Marshals?
U.S. Marshals were involved. They actually... it's not funny, but it's so pathetic that it is funny.
How did they get involved?
My case progressed, they gave him 50-50 custody. My daughter ended up in a child psychiatric unit wanting to commit suicide at the age of 7. As they started to give him more and more custody, I knew what they were doing. I knew that
do?
They were trying to get him full custody. They had made comments that this is where this was going to head. The more that I protected her, the more that they were going to give custody to him. So I had spoken to a counselor and talked to her about going underground, as she would call it. I call it going into hiding. Prior to my daughter meeting with the guardian at Lidham that the court gave her, I had already made plans to go into hiding. There was an incident on October 6th, 2020 at the supervised visitation facility where she met her guardian at Lidham, which resulted in the decision for the court to give full custody to her father. This lady made some outlandish statements that were just incredibly insane and so false. Regarding this meeting with my daughter, they also held my daughter at the facility and allowed her dad to come there when we were supposed to do a custody exchange in front of the police department. My daughter, for an hour and 45 minutes, begged and pleaded not to go with her father. She actually took off running down the road and was chased by several individuals that work at the facility, and the owner of the facility ended up pulling her by her arm, which I have a video of, forcing her to her father's vehicle. At that point, I called the police. The police came out. They interviewed my daughter. She stated that she was being harmed by her father, including her brothers were also being harmed by him. The officer called her a liar. The officer asked if she had been told to say any of these things. She said, no, I remember this abuse. And then coincidentally, the body cam footage from this officer has been purged. And this is ongoing.
Oh, gee, how about that? what a surprise.
Very high profile.
Yeah.
I subpoenaed it early on. I knew what they were going to do. They've played these games, and I have an additional way that I obtained this footage. And we had a last part of my preliminary hearing several weeks ago. On the stand, Officer Byrd of Grass Valley PD decided he was going to answer some questions under oath that were complete lies, and I produced a transcript of what actually transpired between him, my daughter, and the court-appointed attorney. And once he read this document, he kind of recanted, I guess you could say, and then said, yes, the minor did report that she was harmed by her father. And I have a lot of evidence, which I can't disclose exactly right now.
Well,
don't
give away the evidence. And like I say, public,
right.
I don't mind public names as long as they're public, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Well, here's the question, too. Do you find that there's a lot more success in going to a criminal trial because you can actually bring in more evidence, real evidence? Okay, go ahead. Tell me about that,
because
I'm curious.
As scary as it is, I do, because they are able to document and put in the evidence in a way that family court just throws it out and doesn't even listen to it.
Yeah.
So I feel like once I get all of my evidence documented into my criminal case, I'll be able to use that to ultimately get time with my daughter.
Do you have a good lawyer?
I do have an amazing lawyer. He's from San Francisco. I found him.
Well, San Francisco's lawyers.
Yeah.
Lawyers and psychologists in San Francisco. Yeah, no shortage.
He's actually represented multiple women in my same predicament. So he's great.
Oh, I want him on the show too. Okay, so I want both of you back with your lawyers in a couple of weeks.
During the time that I was going all through all of this, and even mm-hmm. when I went into hiding, I wrote the FBI, I wrote the senator, the governor, I wrote mm-hmm. the freaking president. You know, I wrote anybody and everybody. I wrote the attorney general over 100 times. And the responses I would get were either just very generic or mm-hmm. the attorney general just told me to start over back at CPS. And when I met with CPS through the history of my case, I documented who I spoke with, what time it was, what we spoke about, all of these things. I requested all of the CPS reports. They would not furnish them to me. I recited the law code that allows me to obtain those. They still wouldn't get them. I actually had to call the police on CPS twice to enforce my rights to obtain these documents.
Oh,
which is
one government agency is not going to go after another government agency. They're all the club.
Absolutely, but they actually came out and they actually forced them to give me the documents, which ended up being over 500 pages.
Wow.
Which is still not looked at. There was a unification counselor involved in all of this.
What's a unification counselor?
A unification counselor is where they co-counsel the abuser or the other parent, as they say, with
co-counsel.
And you're not they're together in a room doing co-counseling sessions. And at this point,
special.
My daughter wanted nothing to do with her father. And the unification counselor coincidentally used to work in family court services and was court ordered for us to use, you know, so all these people are totally connected. And even my daughter's dad's current family law attorney is somebody that gave a $10,000 grant to the supervised visitation facility that committed perjury and helped my daughter's father be in custody of my daughter.
This is why we had a bill Michael Volpe wrote, who does a lot of work in investigations and things like
I
that.
I love him. He's amazing.
Oh, he's wonderful. Oh, yeah. He was just on last week. We did the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial in great detail. So Michael, fabulous. And so I'll probably have him on with you guys again, but I want to hear your stories first, and then we can figure out, you know, where to go from there. Yeah, go ahead. Uh-huh.
If you want me to elaborate on how U.S. Marshals. So back to that. So I was in hiding for about 6 months, and meanwhile they were the officials, the investigators were harassing some acquaintances that had nothing to do with me. They were calling in, like kidnapping in progress, pulling over a woman that I'd only met briefly once by three different jurisdictions, saying that she was she had my daughter in her vehicle and that she was me. They were searching these people's home with no search warrant, saying they heard a baby crying inside. They were told that I kidnapped a baby. They were told I was heavily armed. Same kind of things that you know Sarah's situation involved.
Yep.
I was living in an RV in the mountains, a very large RV with my children, and the Nevada County Sheriff's Department and the investigators did not possess the, technology to find me. I had a lot of VPN blockers and things of that nature on my phone. I had everything was registered in somebody else's name. I took a lot of precautions to stay in hiding. And they were not able to find me, and so they involved the U.S. Marshals. There was no evidence that I had left the state because I hadn't, and yet the U.S. Marshals were involved. And during my preliminary hearing, the investigator admitted that the only reason that the U.S. Marshals were involved was because they did not possess the technology to find me, because the pings on my phone were showing that I was like within 16,000 miles or something, and they couldn't cover that much area, obviously. It was some insane stuff. I was just choosing that I was like in multiple states and multiple countries and things on the VPN app that I had, which was amazing. Essentially, once the U.S. Marshals got involved, it took them very few days to find me. I was actually going to get my whole file put onto a thumb drive, and I'd just gotten into the vehicle to leave to do so when I noticed some vehicles in the ditch. They were parked with a bunch of, like, sunshades all over the vehicle. It just looked really weird. And at that point, I was texting a lady that I'd hired to be involved in my case, a bunch of, like, the players that were involved from the county, and I was looking down. And all of a sudden, there's, like, cars from every angle in a very rural, mountainy area, and there was shotguns pointed at my head. And I was 9 months pregnant at the time, which is not in any of the articles. I didn't have any prenatal care. I was in hiding, you know. So once I was arrested, they ordered me to throw the keys on the hood, come out of the vehicle. I was not read my rights. I was actually detained and held until a Santa Barbara County police officer came and picked me up. I was then taken to a hospital where I found out that I had actually lost my baby. And then I was brought to the Santa Barbara County Jail where I had to sit and wait, and I was told that they could not process me because they didn't even have a warrant. So I was sitting there with no warrant, which makes no sense. And then they ultimately
put
me in the cell.
Well, they couldn't get a warrant because they weren't charging anything.
Right?
This is all bogus. This is like Randy Weaver and his family, where his wife and kid were killed. So this is very similar. And the reason I wanted you two on together is because your stories are so similar. And the people need to realize this is happening all over the country. These are just the stories you're hearing about.
All over the country. In the beginning of my case, I thought I was like one in a million. And I wrote a letter to all of these officials thinking that I was one in a million. And then I began to find that there's hundreds of thousands of women out there, and this has been going on for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And people seem to think that women had the upper hand in court. And this has been going on. Anytime that you report abuse, specifically sexual abuse, during the time that you were separating from your significant other, they automatically go into this, whatever this plan of action is, you know. I was ultimately put into a cell with a woman who had just killed her mother, so I was in with a murderer. And
wow.
Here I am. I just lost two kids in one day, and sitting in a jail cell with a murderer. And that was craziness. You know, this is not somewhere where a good mom and good person of society should be. And instead of the person committing all of these crimes and these atrocities on my children, I'm the one sitting in jail. It was very hard to wrap my head around any of this. And of course, you lose all of your support system through this because you can't stay in contact with people. And the few people that you do, they think you're crazy for being on, you know, in the hiding and doing the things you're doing, and they don't approve of it. But when force comes to shove, like, what do you do to protect your child? Three different counties in California failed my daughter: Nevada County, Sonoma County, where I moved to after I left Nevada County, and then ultimately when I was arrested, my daughter spoke to Santa Barbara, I guess it's CFS or, well, I don't know what it's called down there, but she told them. And so the social workers actually talked to her, and because Nevada County had filed some kind of protective order if I ever got arrested, they didn't even listen to her. Again, my daughter had no voice. And mind you, going through my family law case, my daughter was able to get on the stand at 7 years old and tell the court, hey, my dad taped me to a chair. He duct taped me to a chair. And she was too scared to go into the sexual abuse, but she actually had a voice in the courtroom, and they still did not listen to her. She told over.
Can she be voicing your criminal case? Can she be voicing your criminal case?
I don't know. I have no contact with her. I haven't seen or heard her voice since March 24th of 2021. I have, in the paperwork from the family court, they actually wrote in that I am not to have any contact with her unless the reunification counselor, who also committed perjury, and she's one of the two people that were sworn in as expert witnesses who claim that I coached my daughter with no evidence. So until she agrees, I can't see my daughter. And they also gave him, you know, full custody and giving him the right to make the decision on whether or not I have contact with her. Mind you, I've had her since she was born. I've done all of the caretaking for her. I've, unless I was out of town working, and then my oldest son was forced to have to take care of his siblings while my daughter's dad slept. The only thing he actually did was take them to and from school.
That's a common thing too. The abusive parents do nothing for the kids. I have to hold you up only because we're out of time. The show's over. We've got like 30 seconds left. This has been fascinating. Thank you both so much for coming forward, Sarah and Lacey. And I want to get you guys on again. I want to talk to your lawyers. Think about it. You don't have to do anything right away, but because I know you have other things to do more important than my show. But the story's here. You can share this. Share it with your lawyers, you know, get anybody else you want to get some sympathy. And I'm going to share this myself with some people that I know that know some fairly powerful politicians and see if we can start to do this at the federal level, possibly the state level too. But the three of us have a lot of work to do. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
In unison,
thank
you guys
so
are great. Okay, you're welcome. All right, that's it for today. This is Greg Penglis. That was an incredible story. I mean, and like I said, this is repeated thousands of times all across the country. It's been going on for way too long. So Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website, which is going to be very active in the family law section very soon, at www.writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And if you want to be a sponsor of the show or contribute, we've got paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. And I'll be back tomorrow with the greatest doctors panel in the world. And we'll talk to you all then.